Hello and welcome to another episode of Radio Free Nintendo. This is episode 340, post E3 edition. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, are James Jones.
Yup.
And Guillaume Veillette.
I'm back from E3.
And we expect John to show up at some point.
God damn it.
He actually has an interesting game to talk about this week, so I hope he shows up soon.
Unlike other weeks?
So, we actually have a really packed show for you. Lots of new games to talk about, like games that actually came out in the last couple of weeks while some of us were at E3. And we have some post E3 kind of wrap up to take care of a little bit later in the show. And, I think that's going to get a little contentious. It should be very interesting. But we're going to kick off with new business, which is where we talk about the games we've been playing and the other things we've been doing. And, Guillaume, by default, has the newest game because he just downloaded it today.
Yeah, I just got a new Super Luigi U. What's the actual name? Yeah, new Super Luigi U.
I think that
U.
is it, yeah.
That's ridiculous. Anyway.
It's a bad name.
Mm-hmm. Last night, first, I have to talk about the process that I went through to get it. Some people didn't have a problem, but once I got back from work today, I fired up the game and no update. I restarted the game, still nothing. So I start again the game a third time. I just basically turned the spot pass on and off and on and off just to try to trigger something. Exit the game, go back in the game, and finally it updates. So this update was just so that I could get the chance to buy the Super Luigi add-on. Mm-hmm. So so go back into the game and finally manage to download it. So that process took forever, and I gotta say, Nintendo, you've got to improve your store, definitely.
Well, here's the thing. This is the first time they've ever really sold this kind of DLC for one of their first-party games, and I'm so glad they're doing it, not only because I'm excited to buy it and to play it, but I'm excited that they're gonna learn so much from this process, and hopefully it's gonna help them sympathize with some of the third parties who are having a lot of trouble. I heard some stuff at E3, without getting into specifics, that makes it sound like some of the stuff we've been complaining about in terms of DLC availability and how hard it is to get to is really all down to Nintendo. And
right.
The third parties are pretty frustrated with with Nintendo right now about how they're handling DLC.
Yeah. Oh, I am sure. I'm sure. I've never doubted for an instant that was not Nintendo's fault.
Well, something may, that's something that may come out of this, a positive.
Yeah.
Okay, and by the way, John is here, and it wasn't his fault.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Technical difficulties.
Yeah.
Skype. Okay. I blame Skype.
So Guillaume was just describing the process of getting new Super Luigi U. Guillaume, have you had a chance to play it yet?
All right. So, no, I did get a chance to play a world and a half. I got to the halfway point in the second world.
Oh, cool.
It's very much, I don't know, I've got mixed feelings about it. I mean, they did basically no work at all on this thing outside of level design and Luigi's physics. There's nothing new really on the overworld. There's no new intro scene. Basically, well, there is something new. When Bowser comes to Peach's castle to kidnap her, Mario isn't there. But his hat is on the table, so I guess he's just gone to the bathroom while everyone else is just enjoying cake, and then they all get thrown.
Of course,
They've said that you can't play as Mario in multiplayer because this is Luigi's Adventure.
Yeah,
and I was wondering if they're actually going to try to explain this in the story, such as it is in this game.
Right.
It sounds like not really in the intro, but maybe in the ending, maybe they'll kind of hint at where the hell Mario has been this whole time.
I'm saying it now. I'm sure he was just in the bathroom.
Yeah. So you've noticed that the game's harder?
Oh, definitely. Before the release of the DLC, Nintendo released a couple of videos explaining what the difference between Mario and Luigi is, and they keep pointing out the fact that Luigi is a little bit floatier and can't stop on a dime like Mario does.
Right.
And I think this video was less to inform us of these two facts, and more to tell us that they know. like they know Luigi's weaknesses and they're going to use them to screw you over again and again. Like they really, for instance, like just right the first fortress, like not only do you have to get used to controlling Luigi with his weird physics, but also everything is faster. Like those giant spinning gears, they're way faster. Or, you know, like these jets of fire that are on and off all the time, they give you way less time now to, you know, go where you need to go before they just light up again. And since Luigi is floatier and can't turn around as fast, that's really, you know, like turning the knife in the wound. You can't just adjust really quickly, you know?
With the 100-second time limit, do you feel like you're having to push through these levels a lot faster, like in a lot more of a rush?
Yeah, at E3 I played maybe one or two levels and I thought, oh, this is not so bad, like the levels are shorter anyway, so I don't feel that pressured. But then when I'm playing at home and I'm actually trying to hit question mark boxes and things like that, like I realize, oh shit, I'm wasting tons of time here, and the timer is already like 60 seconds left, and what the hell am I doing, and I should really be rushing now. And the star coins are actually pretty well hidden. I did have to play the first level like three times at least, because the first time I think I missed the first coin, and it took me three tries to manage to collect the third one, which is in plain sight, but you have to navigate between two of those flying squirrels. And it's pretty hard.
I forget, do you have to get them all in one run, or can you...
No, you can just go back and pick up the one that you were missing.
Oh, good.
There is one thing that's a little bit disappointing, though. Already I feel like they're kind of reusing the same tricks over and over again. Like, there's at least three levels so far where right away the first star coin is just behind, you know, one of those walls that doesn't look like you can go behind them.
Yeah.
And right at the beginning, like a ledge that you would have to backtrack into. And it's like, okay, like you've done this twice already. Can you perhaps find a new trick here? But no, it's definitely challenging. And, they know what Luigi can and can't do. And they really, play on that to make you die over and over again.
So one thing that you get with this update, even if you don't want to spend $20 to download the Luigi content, is Pro Controller support.
Yeah.
Which I did notice. I think you can use more than one of them. So you can mix and match Wii remotes and Pro Controllers, mm-hmm. and of course you can play with the Pro Controller even in single player, which is really nice.
Yeah.
So I did not have time to download the update, and I didn't want to have it running while we record the podcast because we use Skype. But I did download the title update for the game and just tried Pro Controller support real quick in the first level of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that it worked really well. And, you know, I really like the Pro Controller. It has that big, nice D-pad on it, and it's just lighter and a little more comfortable to hold. Mm-hmm. I'm not crazy about using the L and R buttons to spin jump. I'd rather use ZL or ZR, I think. Actually, at first I actually tried to shake it because that's just what I'm used to with the Wii remote. And I have to remember that doesn't work on the Pro Controller. You have to push a button. I just wish it was a different button, and I wish there was a way to customize that. But I
too wish that you could reconfigure those buttons, because the fingers just fall more naturally on ZL and
They're triggers. I mean, they're meant to be, you know, very convenient for your finger to kind of wrap around. But I think I'll get used to it, and I still think that'll be my preferred way of playing it, especially, you know, if I'm using the TV. If I'm playing remotely, I don't mind using the gamepad. I just don't think it's an ideal controller for a Mario game, especially with the D-pad placement being what it is, and some of the other things about it. So I'm looking forward to actually, like, I never finished all the Star Road levels because some of them are insanely hard, and I'm looking forward to going back and giving those another shot with the Pro Controller, and maybe I'll have a better chance now that, you know, I have a little bit tighter controller. Because I don't think the Wii remote is all that great either for playing this game. I'm definitely not a big fan of the shaking.
Well, it does get uncomfortable after a while, for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
So the Pro Controller is going to be nice, and I'll probably end up playing most of the Luigi content on a Pro Controller, is my guess.
Mm-hmm.
All right, man. Well, thanks for the report. I'm sure a lot of us will be playing that in the coming weeks. But I'm going to go next and just spend a couple minutes talking about my very first experience with Animal Crossing, because first day of E3, really before the show opened, I downloaded New Leaf.
And, on hotel internet?
Yeah, over hotel internet.
Oh my god.
It's okay. The Wi-Fi there was okay. It took a while, but it worked. And actually at one point I needed to go to a different floor. Actually, at one point we went out to dinner and I wanted to take my 3DS with me, and it had been downloading in the background on the home screen. So I just took it with me. I'd actually never tried this before, but we left the hotel and obviously it paused the download because I was no longer in the Wi-Fi hotspot. We went to dinner. I was playing some stuff over dinner because we were all there, we were all playing 3DS, and then went back and it just automatically resumed once I got close enough to the Wi-Fi in the hotel. So, and it finished fine. So I think it just does a hash check, and it was nice to see that it actually is competent, the background downloading. But anyway, this is my first time playing Animal Crossing at all outside of like a couple of E3 demos, which is a horrible way to experience this series. And I was kind of joking with the other guys at E3 that it took 10 years, but my curiosity about Animal Crossing finally exceeded my trepidation. And my curiosity comes from knowing so many people who have, in a lot of cases have very similar tastes to me, who are so addicted to this series and who are so enthusiastic every time a new one comes out. And I think my trepidation has always come from the fact that it's a game where you kind of don't do anything, or at least the things you do don't seem very exciting. Mm-hmm. But I think, that this seemed like not only the best version of the game and a really significant upgrade over previous ones, whereas the Wii game, everybody kind of complained that it really was basically the DS game, except not portable anymore. And,
with the big town.
That's and it had Wii Speak support, so that's useless. But
it's actually that's amazing awesome. Wii Speak support in that it actually kind of works. To be fair.
Yeah, okay.
But it's not four heads staring at each other in Brady Bunch style, though.
I like the idea. Actually, I love the idea of downloading New Leaf and having it on my system all the time and being able to carry that with me even while I'm playing other games. And that's something that kind of concerned me about the DS game. It's why I never got that version. And the Wii game, I just felt like I'm never going to spend enough time in front of my TV playing this game to make it worthwhile. Whereas a portable version is much more appealing. So anyway, that's kind of the calculus I used to decide to finally get. And even then, I kind of felt a little dirty as I was downloading it. But
shame in liking Animal Crossing.
No, Jesus. No, no. A little dirty in that I might have just wasted $35 because I might not like this game at all. But it's a risk I'm willing to take.
Very courageous.
And I felt like it was a calculated risk. So far, I will say I am enjoying it. I don't know that I will ever like this game as much as a lot of other people do. I mean, some of the guys at E3 are gonzo over this series. And
they were.
It's fascinating to hear them talk about it. It really
is. The thing is, for me, it's not a question of will you enjoy it, because you will enjoy it for a while.
It's as deep as you're willing to go.
If nothing else, it is very charming. And that's something you can get right away. The graphics are wonderful. The world, I mean, it's a very small world that you're in, but the town that you have is beautiful. The characters are very detailed, and they look really cute, and they're all different. All the animals in town look completely different, and they have their own kind of personalities visually, even before you start talking to them. I think the localization and the writing are great. They're funny, and they're weird and quirky, and every character does really have its own kind of personality, and it makes you want to talk to the characters, even if you don't expect that you're really going to get anything out of them. Sometimes they will give you things, or they'll give you a quest and you can go do that and then you'll get an item for it. But most of the time I talk to the characters just because I kind of want to hear what they say.
You know, it's always interesting. They always have interesting little quips like, did you see so-and-so over there? Yeah.
Especially
the other day,
when they gossip about one another.
Yeah, they gossip about one another. That's pretty funny.
I haven't seen that yet.
But or they'll fight. That's always good.
Yeah. It's funny. It's different than talking to characters in an RPG, for instance, because usually you would do that in order to, A, gather more information about your current objective, or B, learn some more about the backstory that's been developed for this world that you're in and get a richer experience. And this is closer to B, but there's not really backstory. I mean, I don't think there's really a mythology of Animal Crossing. It feels like this world didn't really exist before you showed up, although maybe the characters did. But it's like they're building their lives in this town that you are the mayor of. And the things that you do have some impact on them. And the things that they do have some impact on you. So it does feel like there's a kind of a community here, even though you're the only real person in it. And
Literally nice two, actually. You're the only human in there. Everybody else is an animal.
That's right, yeah. And it is a nice place to be. And I guess that's kind of how I feel about Animal Crossing. It's inviting. It is a nice place to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's inviting and it's charming and it's pleasant to be there. And it's a game that, for me, I get tired of it after about 10 or 15 minutes. Which is pretty normal, I think. I don't think the game's really meant to be played for hours at a time, even though some people do. Mainly by cheating the clock and sort of resetting the day so that they can sort of play several days in a row. But if you play it without cheating, then there's, after about 10 or 15 minutes, there's not a whole lot left to do in the town as far as I can tell. So you kind of go in there, you have some chores, but you don't really have to do them every day, and you don't really have to do them at all. But you might do them because there's some benefit, you know, and you can do different things every day. Maybe one day I'll walk around with a shovel and dig up fossils. Another day I'll pick up fruit, and another day I'll kind of focus on fishing. And, you know, there are, although in a given day, there aren't really very tangible goals in terms of what you should be doing or what you might be excited to do. There are these long-term goals of paying off Tom Nook and expanding your house. And now there are these public work projects. Because you're the mayor, you can spend a lot of money and build bridges and park benches and put up signs and things like that.
I mean, it's just an evolution of the town donation fund from the previous games, if you're an Animal Crossing fan who hasn't bought this yet.
Oh, okay. Yeah. And then there's the museum where you can take fossils and bugs and fish and stuff. And they collect.
See, that's
it, and
where you lose life, right there.
Yeah.
Stopping the museum is what takes away days of your life.
Yeah, it does. Because
you're like, I've got to find this fucking fish. Yeah, it's only going to be it's only going to be available for like 3 more days, then it's gone for the rest of the year.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah.
And then you're like, God damn it, why haven't I caught a coelacanth yet? Well, because it's a fucking coelacanth.
Yeah, just to give you an idea, I think at one point I remember there was one New Year's Eve where I really didn't do anything that particularly spectacular, which is actually most New Year's Eves for me.
Yeah.
But I remember specifically, because at, like, you know, when the clock strikes midnight, they have the fireworks. You know, fireworks go off. And so I'm like, I'm going to go into Animal Crossing and I'm just going to see what happens at midnight on New Year's Eve. And sure enough,
it's fucking mental.
And sure enough, I was sitting there at midnight in Animal Crossing watching, well, you know, Amy had fallen asleep or whatever, but it's like I was sitting there in Animal Crossing watching these fireworks and I'm like, on the one hand, I was like, wow, that's really cool. On the other hand, I'm like, what am I doing?
And there are, like, people giving you these party poppers you can set off throughout town and freak people. It's just the freaking weirdest shit.
Yeah. Yep. So I feel your shame, Johnny.
Sure.
I feel your shame.
So it's probably a game that, I don't know that my personality is such that I can get super addicted to this or pour that much time into it. But I do think it's something I'm going to mess around with for a while, you know, for a few weeks and kind of keep going back to it until I open up all the major features, because they do kind of roll out very slowly. It took me a week to get Street Pass enabled, which is kind of annoying. But, you know, it does feel like you go there every couple days and there's always something new. And at some point that will stop because I'll have basically seen all the major things. And then it's like, you know, completing collections and stuff. And that is not really something that I get involved in. It doesn't appeal to me much. Right. But I do think it's a game that I will probably keep going back to every now and then, even for a long time, you know, because it'll always be there. I know that anytime I turn it on, there'll be something interesting will happen, you know. And it's not a game that takes a lot of commitment. It's not a game that I feel like I have to turn it on and play it for 2 hours to really see something new. You know, it's a very short thing. And again, I kind of like having it built into the system digitally because now it's always there and it's very easy for me to justify opening it up, you know, just for a quick minute and then go and doing something else. So I'm pretty happy with my purchase.
Yeah, and it's gonna feel good. It's gonna feel good that $35 you spent is probably the last time you ever spend money on Animal Crossing.
That's correct.
Because any future installment is probably going to be the exact same. So,
right.
I mean, unless you
Guillaume's going to get garroted by some Animal Crossing fans now.
Oh no, but I mean, like, if you do get into the collecting, I could see myself, I guess, buying the game over and over again. But there's definitely like major diminishing returns from one game to the next.
Yeah, which exactly. That's why I haven't bought it, because I mean I think I've bought two different versions of it. I got it on DS and then on Wii.
Somebody dressed as Tangy is going to run Guillaume down in a parking lot.
No, it's just, you know, like when I did buy the DS version after playing the Cube version for a while, and I felt like I had just paid for the privilege to basically start over.
Yeah.
And that didn't really feel good at all, so I sold it pretty quickly.
I think the online stuff in the DS one makes it a worthy upgrade.
Yeah, and on the 3DS version, it must be so much easier to actually go online.
Yeah. Sure. It sounds like it is, and it sounds like a lot of people are really using that. I have not messed with online yet because I kind of want to understand the mechanics and the systems of the game a little better before I get involved in all that. Because people are mainly using online to sort of abuse the economy and stuff like that.
That's what you use Animal Crossing Online for.
Yeah. So I'm not super interested in that. I am interested in just going to other people's towns and just seeing how different it is from mine, you know? And but regardless, it's a very interesting game for me, you know, just because it is really my first real exposure to it.
So one thing that I've seen just by being on the internet for the last, you know, couple months since it came out in Japan is the use of the QR code fabric designs.
Oh.
So in all the previous Animal Crossing games, if you're total virgin to this territory, there was the Mabel and Abel sisters shop where you could design fabrics that you could use on the ground as ground covering. You could put them on and they would wrap around you as a shirt.
I made myself a shitty Superman shirt.
Yeah, exactly. But the resolution in this game is so much higher on the pattern making,
mm-hmm.
and you can share them via QR codes. So the stuff that's been come out of Japan, and since the game came out here, the stuff that's come out is unfucking believable. There is a complete costume set of the characters from Shin Megami Tensei 4 that have been floating around that look like they're officially made. Like, it's unbelievably high quality stuff.
Yeah.
And
that, I mean, that's really cool. Like, I don't think I will ever care about fabric designs in any game, much less Animal Crossing. But I love that that's a thing because clearly some people care about it.
It's an interesting way that they have taken what was originally billed as a communication game and sort of flipped it on its head. So now you just scan these things that people have made over the internet. You just scan them with the 3DS camera. And they have communicated to you this remarkable work of art that they have built for you to wear mm-hmm. or to frame. And in fact, somebody apparently has made an application that converts images to texture patterns. So it's all downhill from here.
Yeah. There will be, yeah, really.
There will be Pinai on every town you visit.
Yes.
It is inevitable.
Well,
but it is really, I mean, is it like a great addition to the game? You know, it is what it is, but it's a neat little feature they threw in.
It's an addition, which is notable.
Right. It's the kind of thing that would make fans of this series crazy.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful for it.
Okay. Well, there will probably be another Animal Crossing report somewhere down the line as I spend a lot more time with it. But I just kind of want to let people know what my first impressions are because I know there were some people very curious what I would think. And there were also like Alex at E3. He was kind of like trying to give me tips and kind of guide me because he really wanted me to not hate it, especially after I'd paid for it. But at the same time, he is so entrenched in the culture of Animal Crossing and all the minutia that a lot of times he would try to tell me things and I didn't even understand what he was saying, you know, because he understands the system. It's like Pokemon fans telling you about EVs, you know, it's like, is this bizarre, crazy stuff that a casual player, certainly a first time player of the series, really cannot appreciate, in fact, can turn you off because it's so detailed and it's so deep. And I'm more like, how do I get that dude to move into my town? You know, like that's just the real basic stuff is all I care about. Cause I'm really trying to enjoy the game on the face of it first. Mm-hmm. And then I'll decide whether I want to take the next step down the rabbit hole. And I probably won't, but that's okay. Anyway, John, why don't you go next?
Well, I'm playing Oracle of Ages.
Oh,
Legend of Zelda Oracle
neat.
Of Ages. Yeah. So I took advantage of the deal that they had going on the eShop where you could buy both of these guys for $5 a piece. And for some people, they might scoff at that and say that these things are overpriced because they're GBA color games. But I've never played them before. So for me, it was great. It was perfect.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So because I want to play them back to back.
John, look, anybody who tells you that $10 for two Zelda games is overpriced needs to get a reality check.
Yeah. I agree.
We live in a golden age.
These people might not know that the handheld Zelda games are really fucking good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And the thing is, I completely agree, because these ones, they're closer to the Super Nintendo ones. I mean, they pretty much are exactly like the old Super Nintendo, you know, like Link to the Past. And those are, I'm figuring out that those are my favorite games in the series. These ones, cause you know, I really liked Link's Awakening, really loved that game. And these ones are my favorites simply because they still kind of maintain that arcadey kind of style. And what I'm really liking about Ages so far is that there are several areas that where, you know, you can get stuck. You know, I've had to consult the FAQ file a couple times. But usually when I go to it, I'm just like, yeah, it's pretty much what I thought. I just didn't probably push it far enough. So, you know, I just kind of bailed on it when I was actually doing the right thing, but I just didn't really feel like sitting around and, you know, for another half hour walking around aimlessly, you know, wondering if I was doing the right thing or not. So, but yeah, what I like is the fact that they don't really spell everything out to you. I know in the console games, kind of one of the beefs that I have is that it just seems like everything is explained to you. And sometimes it's almost on rails, it seems. Like, you know, you encounter an enemy and you fight the same enemy a bunch of times the same way, and you know, you pretty much instantly figure out how to kill things. And you know, with these games, with these ones, it's sometimes a little bit more, you know, you can get surprised a bit more. Like you'll figure out a way to kill an enemy that you never would have thought, like, wow, I can blow that guy up with a bomb, I hadn't even considered that. So you know, there's always like kind of like a little element of surprise there. So I think right now I'm at Moonlit Grotto, which is the third dungeon. Yeah, and I mean, you know, there's a couple things in there that have stumped me. Nothing too major, but yeah, I mean, I'm playing it kind of in bite-sized chunks, like on the train or whatever. Yeah, what I like about it too is the fact that I wish Nintendo would do this more. I like the fact that you know, Capcom, as through Flagship, they had kind of a hand in it, and there's just subtle little tweaks to the formula that you can see. Like, there's more cutscenes than Nintendo probably would have put in, and there's a little bit more of an like anime influence than Nintendo would have injected in there.
Oh yeah, his relationship with the oracles is super anime. Like, there's this weird dance scene they do. It's goofy, crazy, stupid shit.
Yeah, but just the fact that they have cutscenes that are kind of like an anime style Link.
Oh yeah,
I was like, wow, that's really different, you know, for one of these games. But that's the Capcom influence. I think they kind of bring a little bit of a flair to the series, I think, which I think is pretty cool.
I mean, we know, you know, the fate of the person who directed those games, right?
Sakamoto?
It's the guy who directed...
Not Sakamoto. Okamoto.
Yeah, it's the guy who directed the recent Zelda games. He flipped over to Nintendo.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was the guy that directed Skyward Sword.
He used to work at Flagship. I did not realize that.
Yeah, I believe that's an accurate statement, yes.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, it is.
So basically, they just took the people they liked when Capcom shut Flagship down.
Yeah. I mean, it's too bad. I mean, I think they did a really good job. I mean, you know, on both of these games, I'm sure they're and great.
They did Minish Cap also, which is...
Yeah. They did do Minish Cap,
Minish
yes.
Cap is amazing. I love that game, too.
I haven't played that in a while, and I have it as an Ambassador game, but I never did boot it up on 3DS, and one day I will get around to that.
What's really dumb, and I don't remember how much of this is reality, but if I recall correctly, weren't they planning on doing three games?
Yeah, but the third game was supposed to be some sort of remake of the original.
Yeah, it's like,
and eventually they, you know, they realized, wow, this is way too much work, and perhaps
it's like, where were they as a company, Nintendo and Capcom? They said, yeah, we can handle three games
at the same time.
At the same time,
yeah.
Like, how crazy is it that one studio developed two Zelda games simultaneously and released them on the same day?
Yeah. Only half as crazy when you think about the fact they intended to do another one.
But at the same time, they are using assets from Link's Awakening,
sure.
and they are reusing characters from every other Zelda game.
But every other Zelda game does that too.
Yeah, but maybe not to this extent.
Awakening apes characters all over the place.
Yeah, but I don't know. Like, I think these games went even farther into just like reusing characters, placing them in new situations. Like, you've got the freaking toilet hand from Majora's Mask in one of these games. Like,
awesome.
I don't know. They took everything and they just put it in there. And they were like, yeah, like, we're going to make
Link's
a Zelda
Awakening
game.
Link's Awakening apes chain chomps. I mean, it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
It's cool, though. I mean, it was fun seeing that stuff on a game.
I mean, it's
game.
Cool, but it is mm-hmm. it is ridiculous.
Yeah, but now I've heard that Ages is the harder of the two. I don't know if...
Well, usually the common thing that I hear is that Ages is more puzzly, and Seasons is more action-y.
Okay. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see... See when I play them, because I'll move right on after Ages to Seasons.
I've only ever played Seasons. I played it back around when I got my GBA, so like 2001.
Yeah.
And I think I didn't even own it. I borrowed a copy from somebody and played it that way on my GBA. Because there was like some slightly updated features if you played it on GBA versus a Game Boy Color. But I enjoyed Seasons a lot. I don't remember a whole lot about it. That was kind of a long time ago, and I haven't played it since then. But I bought both as well, and I'm starting with Ages, because that's the one I've never played at all. But I'm like 10 minutes. I was like booted up on the plane on the way to E3, and I played it for 10 minutes. I said, this seems really cool. I can't wait to play more of this in several weeks.
Yeah.
So. The only thing I really remember to differentiate the two is I remember the two oracles and the game they were paired with, mostly because they are color-coded to the game they're paired with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I remember the powers, because obviously they're sort of in the name. The Seasons powers are in the Seasons game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but it's beyond that, like, I have a real... I played them at the same time. I was sort of back-to-back in dungeons from one to the other.
Oh, wow.
So they're really blurred in my head.
Yeah, I can imagine.
I mean,
yeah.
They are like, well, because if you put passwords in one and the other, they kept giving you these things. So you'd get a password, then you jump to the other one and put it in there, and you get this like power bracelet or whatever.
Yeah, that was my next question. Exactly, what's shared between them?
So there's the mouse that ran the photo booth in Link's Awakening, runs this like trading thing where you put in passwords from one game, and you get stuff from the other, like you get like a bracelet to give you skills and stuff.
Yeah.
But in the end state, if you beat one game, you then unlock the final boss in the other. By putting this password in. It's kind of weird. I didn't actually finish both games. I finished one and then I put the password in on the other and then didn't finish it. And ultimately, so I've never actually seen the Ganon fight.
Really?
I know it's weird. The whole setup is weird, but I just never got around to it. Because you're asking me to play, like, 12 Zelda dungeons in a month. It's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. I can see you getting burnt out on that.
Yeah, I played those games back in the day, and I think I didn't really bother transferring items from one to the other, but I did play, like, one and then the other. Whichever you start with first, like, you're always going to end up with the same end content, I believe. Yeah, basically, you unlock the true ending, the true last boss fight. And an extra dungeon, if I remember correctly.
Oh, a whole extra dungeon. That's
cool. I don't even think I think it's like a mini dungeon.
Yeah.
But still,
that's
worth
pretty cool
doing.
Yeah.
Now, of course, the funny thing is that I've just spoiled the true ending. But if you didn't guess it was Ganon, well, then you're an idiot.
Yeah, exactly. yeah, but you know, that's the thing. It's like I'm just glad that Nintendo put these out because you know it's like there is a chunk of people that have not played these.
Oh yeah, I'm sure there's a ton of people haven't played them.
You know? I was trying to think back of why I didn't play them, and I believe it's because when they came out, I think that I had just traded in my Game Boy Color on a Game Boy Advance.
Yeah, and you wanted to use the new hotness.
Yeah.
You could play them on a Game Boy Advance, though.
Yeah, but he wanted the new hotness. He wanted to play Rayman 1 on his Game Boy Advance.
I just moved on to other things on Game Boy Advance, and I just never came back to play them.
Right.
You know, I think I was like, you know, I'll play them at some point, and then the way it is with handheld games... You know,
right? They get buried, especially on the Game Boy, because there was just a deluge.
I just find with handheld games they get forgotten quite quickly.
Yes,
you know,
even if they're really good.
Yeah. Yep. Even if they're really, really good, I mean,
it can be. Yeah. Some make a more lasting impression. You know, a lot of people feel like Link's Awakening is their favorite Zelda game ever, but that game has an unusual amount of care put into it.
Yeah,
and it creates a very interesting world that is that stands apart from other Zelda games, which is partly why it sticks out so much.
Yeah, and the thing is, those games are very unique. They stand alone in a sense that they aren't like an offshoot done by some B team. you know, a lot of these games. That's why, like, they aren't really forgotten as much, but still, it just seems like they're... Maybe it's because they aren't... They're shorter experiences overall, but...
Link's Awakening is a long game.
Yeah, that's true. And I guess RPGs, yeah, I mean, RPGs are too. But I guess that's why RPGs are mainly... They're the ones that I always remember with handhelds a lot of the time.
Yeah, yeah. I think why Link's Awakening is memorable is ultimately just a function of it was just kind of this really... I mean, it's a really freaky game.
Yeah.
Relative to any Zelda that had come out to that point, it's super freaky.
Yeah, I need to play that again.
I got that on 3DS the day it came out, but I played it too, and I loved it. But I think that one of the reasons Link's Awakening stands out so much for people is that especially at the time it came out, even though I didn't play it till years later, but it is a game on a scale that you had never seen on Game Boy, and you really almost never saw after that until Seasons and Ages came out, like, what, mm-hmm. 6 years later or something like that. Mm-hmm. So it was also...
Well, I mean, there's Pokemon, obviously.
There was Pokemon, but yeah, which is definitely a big game, and that's probably the other Game Boy game that people would identify with the most.
There's a real line of demarcation you can draw in the Game Boy library, sort of this before and after Pokemon era, where you didn't see these really big Game Boy games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There was Link's Awakening, but besides that, I mean, there was a couple RPGs, but they were all relatively small.
Yeah, for the early years, it was like the early years of the NES, where you only had Ice Climber and stuff like that. And the Game Boy did eventually evolve into a console that could have big RPGs and platformers that felt very much console-like, like Wario Land. You know, something beefier.
I'm very excited for these games to be on 3DS, not only because I want to play them, and not only because I think a lot of other people deserve a chance to play them, and will, because they're so cheap now and they're so convenient. But I like the idea of Nintendo pushing these bigger Game Boy games that are really meatier experiences and establishing kind of an appetite for them on the 3DS Virtual Console, because I still really want Square to release some of their stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, Guillaume's talked a lot about how Final Fantasy Legend 2 is like one of his favorite games ever. Legend 2 and Legend 3 and Final Fantasy Adventure, which is the original Seiken Densetsu, like the prequel to Secret of Mana. Those are games that I've always wanted to play and I've never really gotten to. And this is the perfect platform to catch up. And they'll be like $3 or $4.
Yep.
It's like, please make this happen.
No, they'll be square. They'll be like $8.
That, like, I feel like the release of these games is maybe a sign that, you know, maybe the audience is there if these sell pretty well.
Yeah. I mean, if they hype them up, I mean, certainly people will buy them.
I mean, I think there'll be a certain amount of sales on those games just because of what they are. I mean, I don't know what Square's appetite for the virtual console is.
Yeah, that's what scares me.
Well, they've done pretty well on Wii. It took a long time for them to get around to it. But in the end, they've released... Especially the Square games. Now, the NX games from Super Nintendo have not
They basically told them to F off.
After ActRaiser, it went downhill pretty fast, and they haven't released
many. Well, to be fair, that is the highlight. So
that is a highlight. There are actually a lot of fantastic Super NES NX games.
I don't disagree, but that's the highlight.
Sure, most of them are pretty obscure in America. That's the problem. But on the Square side, there's tons. And I think Square really should get into this early, because if you think about the way things tend to sell on Virtual Console, the mass market games do so well. You know, if you look at the top stuff on the Wii Virtual Console, where they actually did like the rankings and you could see the most popular games, it's always Mario and Zelda and stuff like that. Think about how good Final Fantasy would do in search terms, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, that's a game, if you see anything with the word Final Fantasy in it, and it only costs like $4 or $5, you're going to download it. And you don't have to be a really hardcore gamer to think that that's appealing, you know?
Yeah.
Because they're nostalgic and they're games that stick in your mind because they are longer and because they have stories. So I think they really should get in on it, but we'll see. I think they will eventually. I just wish they'd hurry up.
Yeah.
They do. Square actually, for the past 2 or 3 generations, have ultimately had pretty good support on Nintendo platforms, both console and handheld, but it always takes them like 3 years to get in on it. And I don't understand the delay that they seem to have, but eventually they come around and they bring some really good support to it, even Virtual Console on Wii.
Yeah, it seems like Square's priority now is putting stuff on iOS and Android. Really?
Yeah, but they are trying to like kind of cut their budgets and focus on mm-hmm. like cheaper games. This is the epitome of cheap games. They've already been made.
They're already made. Yeah, but I mean, even re-releasing stuff on
they're
iOS.
Famous,
but then again,
they market themselves. That's my point. Yeah. Like they'd be crazy
I
not
agree.
To do that. All right, so let's move on to James with a demo.
During the pre-E3 window, I downloaded the demo to the game Project X Zone or Cross Zone, if you want to be Japanese, but you don't because that's stupid. And so for those of you who haven't been following this game, you'd be tremendously easily excused because, first off, there was no chance it was coming to the U.S., but it is, and Europe, which makes no sense.
Like next week in America, right?
Yeah, and it comes out. It'll be out probably about Tuesday. I think it's Tuesday.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, like, pretty soon after this episode goes up. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The game itself is just a mind-numbing thing to think about. It is a collection of characters from Namco, it's Namco Bandai, Sega, and
Capcom.
What was the other one?
Capcom.
Capcom, yeah. Capcom characters in a game. And it's just basically they took these characters out of their game world, put them in a different world, like I guess it's supposed to be like the real world, and they are in a strategy RPG format fighting other evil characters from their worlds to stop something. I don't know because my brain stopped working. But in the demo, it's one level. It looks like it's maybe an hour or so into the game. You've got various characters ranging from let's see, the Dot Hack PlayStation game. You've got the Soma Bringer cast, which you'd be excused for not recognizing. You've got Ken and Ryu from Street Fighter. You've got characters from Sakura Wars. Two different Sakura Wars games are represented. Three, actually. Who else is in there? There's a ton of these just really random characters in there. And the gameplay is basically you go and you walk these parties across a grid, and they attack. You take turns attacking and defending, and then once you attack, you can hit these combo patterns, and then if you charge up your attacks, you can unleash these super attacks that are like 2.5 minute long anime cutscene insanity. It's awesome, and I love it, because it's the stupidest thing I've ever played, and it's wonderful for it.
Does it beat Asura's Wrath?
Oh, that's hard, because in Asura's Wrath, late in the game, there's a quick time event where you fist pound.
I think I saw that on GAF or on our forums.
Yeah, I can believe it. It's really stupid, but it's a different kind of dumb because it's just so over the top and showy all the time.
Yeah.
So like when the characters are attacking and you're pushing the buttons to make them attack in during these combat segments, it's just an absolute flurry of just cartoon violence going on. Mm-hmm. And then when you summon help from parties that are next to you, they show up on screen and start pounding on stuff too. And then if you use like the suit summon, some teams have like a third character who's off screen most of the time. Like for Ken and Ryu, it's a character from another Square Enix fighting game. It's the one where it's about like Frankenstein monsters. So you'd be totally excused for not knowing that game because I can't remember what it's called.
Darkstalkers?
No, it's not. No.
Wow, I really don't know that.
It's a super obscure game.
Yeah,
I mean, it's super duper obscure. In for one set of Sega characters, their support is Ooh La La, so she comes up and starts performing. And it's just totally random insanity, and I'm absolutely in love with it for it. Because it's just, I don't care about the plot, because I'm sure it's going to be dumb. But you get to listen to these characters in persona, in almost a satirical persona of themselves from the games they're from, talk to one another about shit that's not real in a game that they all, it's like, this is the real world, and they're freaked out because they're in it. At one point, the VIs from Dot Hack, so the user characters, they Ken and Ryu point out, must be the real world, to which they counter, no, because we're players in the real world. How does that make any sense? And the response is basically, don't worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, Dot Hack is already so meta that I can't even explain it. I can't even describe it.
Yeah, I mean,
but
Ken's response is basically like, don't worry about it. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. Well, that's this game, right? I mean, I'm not surprised that you love this because the concept itself is ridiculous in the first place. And then they dump all these characters into a strategy RPG.
Yeah.
I mean, this game, you know, like the title really couldn't be much worse than Project X Zone, they might as well just call it James Jones's Project X Zone.
I would be thrilled to have my name on this.
And then give it the Carnage Racing box art.
Yeah, we're good to go. Yeah. So my favorite is the supercharged.
Because it's only going to sell 10 copies regardless.
Oh, no. My favorite is the supercharged attacks, which is, I mentioned, it's like a 2-minute anime cutscene. I have played the demo so many times to get all of them that it's absurd. And there are some that I like so much, I've watched them like 3 times because they're just dumb. I mean, they go on for way too long.
Is this like on the order of Subspace Emissary?
Oh, it's weirder. It's super weird. Wow. So like, there's the one for the Dot Hack characters is like 42 seconds long. It's the character Black Rose just pummeling the crap out of them, and then the character Kite doing this thing that in the context of the game it's from, the Data Drain attack, in context where it makes sense, was way the fuck too long in that game. They made it longer and crazier. And you just like, all right, game, go ahead. I'll just watch for the next 2 minutes. And you just happily sit there and watch it trudge along through this insane rainbow of destruction. Dude. It's a monumentally stupid game that I'm overly thrilled to wait to get the chance to play.
I love that this game exists and that you're going to get to play it in English. And I feel so bad for the publisher for all the money that they're going to lose on this game.
I know, they're going to take a bath for me personally.
I think they've just done a solid one to all the American otaku.
So the one thing that may be a bonus to them, though, is that it from at least based on the demo, they're not localizing any of the voice acting because the game is fully voice acted.
Mm-hmm.
They're just putting the text at the bottom in English. So the localization.
I think that's how the full game is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So I think the localization cost might not have been terrible.
Yeah.
If the sales tend to trend towards online or via the eShop, which I imagine they will because they probably make it really hard to find in retail, they may actually do okay.
Yeah, because it'll be more profitable per copy. And the people, right. If you know what this game is, you're smart enough to find it on the eShop.
But see, the thing is, though, I kind of want a physical copy just so I can say this exists.
It'll be a great collectible for sure.
Like, look at this fucking thing. This is a real thing. This is the thing that happened.
This happened.
And then somebody localized it.
This happened in my time, child.
This, like,
when I was young.
There were characters in the demo that I looked at and went, who the fuck is this? Like, this is the person who played the Tatsunoko versus Capcom and actually recognized some of the Tatsunoko shit. I'm like, I don't know who any of these people are. Oh my god. I've got some weird games in my collection. And this is going to go pretty close to the top at this point.
Awesome.
And I'm thrilled for it.
All right, so let's swing back around to Guillaume because he has a combination of games. I'm very interested to see the links you found between these two.
I think the links are pretty obvious, actually, because before going to E3, I hadn't bought games in a long time, so I went through my wish list and I was like, you know what, I'm going to get these two Nintendo games that I've wanted to play for a while now, Wario Land 2 and Luigi's Mansion Dark Moon. And I bought them at the same time. I kind of started playing them in tandem, you know, like just like going back and forth, like between one and the other. And they kind of led me to a crisis of faith. Not to be overly dramatic, but
it was just a matter of time before we had one of these on the show.
Yeah.
I have one every week.
I was kind of, you know, I was thinking like, what the hell? I'm not enjoying this as much as I thought I would. And these should be right up my alley. Like the things, like one of the things that I like about video games, about Nintendo games in particular, is just, you know, exploring and finding all the nooks and crannies and just figuring out the design of a level and finding all the secrets and, you know, feeling pretty clever about it or appreciating the cleverness that went into designing them. And so I'm playing Wario Land 2, which is chock full of secrets, you know, and Luigi's Mansion 2 is kind of the same as well. You do have a lot of puzzles to solve and hidden walls and secrets and stuff like that. And
Wario Land 2 probably has more secret content than it has non-secret content.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But in both cases, you're kind of forced to look for them. Like, as you said, in Wario Land 2, like, sometimes you won't find the exit, if you don't look for secrets. And in some ways, Luigi's Mansion 2 is the same. Like, you do need to find every ghost if you want the path, for the end of the mission to appear. And I wasn't enjoying it. And I think that's because perhaps, like, both these games have a ton of secrets, but they don't feel all that well made, like, all that well designed. In both games, I felt like I was just hunting for coins all the time. And, like, in Luigi's Mansion 2, I was just opening every drawer and shining the dark light everywhere to find something. And basically, I'm hugging every wall and mashing A to, you know, to try to find something, because there's going to be something there, but there's not necessarily the clues that would tell you that there is something there.
The exploration doesn't feel organic.
No.
It feels like you're having to do a depth-first search to find everything in the game.
It feels like running around in Super Metroid with the X-ray scope and just checking every single room.
That's exactly what it sounds like.
Exactly. And Wario Land 2 is a little bit of the same. Like, the early levels, I think, are better because there are clues when you can break a wall down and go through it. Like, the walls appear weak.
I could do that whenever I want.
But, sure. But eventually, the more and more the levels become just, like, you have to charge into every random wall because there might be something there.
Yeah, I think it's more that, I mean, that is a way to do it, but I think it gets to the point where they don't want to show you where secrets might be visually. They want to sort of convey the suggestion that there might be something hidden there by virtue of the level design itself. So it's a very tough balance, and I find that the Metroid games probably do a better job of this usually than the Wario Land games.
I agree.
It's similar in that you run up into a corner, and even though there's no visual clue there that there might be something hidden, it just kind of feels like there should be something. It's like, why does this corner exist if not to contain something for me, the player? And so that is the clue. And a lot of times in Metroid, a lot of times that's the only clue that there might be something there.
Yeah, but in Wario Land 2's case, sometimes, like, there is this situation where, like, oh, there's got to be something here, and there isn't. And at other times, there's, like, perfectly normal walls, and you think there's absolutely no indication that there might be something there, and yet there is. Like, I don't like that at all, because then I just find myself checking everything and knocking on every wall and just...
Yeah, it kind of gets in the way of gameplay, because you become preoccupied with it.
Yeah. And I burn out on it, and I'm just... Yeah. I'm not having fun. I'm not finding myself clever for having found something. I just find myself lucky.
Yeah, you have to be careful, and I've talked about this before, and I've misrepresented my feelings on it, so I'll try to be careful how I say this, but it is often possible to play a very good game in such a way that you make it not fun for yourself, and sometimes that's the game's fault, because just like what you're talking about, sometimes the game too easily funnels you into a style of playing that's not really the most fun way for you to play it, and sometimes you have to kind of go against the grain a little bit and sort of force yourself to play it in a way that you can enjoy more. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that makes total sense.
Yeah, but as I said, I feel like you have to play this way sometimes to even get to the end of the level.
So that is a problem then for you.
Yeah, yeah. And I just, I don't know. Like, normally I would be having fun playing these, but right now I just feel like I'm kind of... wasting my time, and that's not a feeling I like.
Maybe it's also just not the game for now. Like, maybe it's not the game you need at this moment in time. Maybe you need a game with a 100-second time limit.
Yeah, and this maybe month. Yeah, and maybe, like, buying these two games, like, I wasn't thinking about it, but maybe buying these two games at the same time was a really bad idea.
yeah, that's quite possible. All right, man, very interesting perspective. So I wanted to talk about about one more game, and it's a new game that just came out a couple weeks ago. I got a review copy actually from the developer / I guess self-publisher Genius Sonority, this sort of Nintendo partner. They've made a lot of the Pokemon console games in the past decade or so, but they've also been making the Denpomen series on 3DS. And the first one, I only ever played the demo, did not like the demo. Like, it was clearly meant to be kind of like a Dragon Quest-like RPG, but on a smaller scale, and also just kind of done on the cheap. And it just felt really grindy and also kind of lacking in personality. And I'd heard pretty good things about the sequel, and I'd heard that they'd kind of address some of those problems, even though it was made, like, I think less than a year later in Japan. And it's coming out pretty soon after the first one, even here in the
West. Than a year later.
Right. And so I've put about, I don't know, 6 or 7 hours into it right now, and I still feel like I'm pretty early in the game. It's probably not a 100-hour game, but it's probably more than a 10-hour game. You know, it's an RPG. But I actually am really enjoying it so far. It is, you know, one thing they added to this one is an overworld, and I think the overworld is actually a lot of fun to explore. So it's the world map is actually a globe, and it's all done in pixel art. So when you see the world on the screen as you're running around it, it looks pretty normal. I mean, it looks like a typical RPG overworld. But then when you zoom out and look at the whole world on the map, it's all wrapped around a sphere that you can rotate, and all the land masses and oceans that you've been exploring, because you've zoomed out, they kind of abstract them into pixel art, which is just a nice style thing, you know, and it just looks really cool. And the game has a lot of things like that. The characters are legitimately cute and funny looking. They look a lot like Miis, and I still kind of don't understand why you can't just play with Miis from the Street Pass Plaza. Maybe it's a problem with, like, negotiating with Nintendo based on what the characters would be doing in the game, because they can die. So maybe that has something to do with it. But the characters, I mean, they really do kind of look like randomly generated Miis, but they are funny looking and they are cute and the animations are funny. And I think the battles, although they're pretty difficult, and the game overall, I would say, is fairly challenging. It's not, definitely not a first, you know, it's not my first RPG. It is, it's probably made for people who have played a Dragon Quest or a Pokemon game before and kind of understand those systems, and they understand how to build a team in order to, so just like in Pokemon, like you go into this cave and there's a lot of water monsters there. And so you need to go back to the town and put together a team of Dimpa men that you've caught, you know, using the dumb AR game that's built in.
You mean the great AR game?
Yeah, it's dumb, but it doesn't take long to do, and you can catch a lot of Dimpa men really fast. So it's not a problem. But you kind of pick out the ones that are going to be able to perform better in that situation. And you don't really have to get really attached to them, because they all level up even if they're not in your party. So it's not like you go back to your house and you're like, damn it, I have to go and get all the yellow ones in order to get through this dungeon. But all the yellow ones are at level 1 because I never used them. And now I have to grind a bunch to get them caught up to where the dungeon's at. No, they all level up together all the time. And they learn new abilities, and the abilities get better. And the battles, I'll say, considering you have 4 or 6 or 8 characters in your party, the battles go really quickly. Because you can just kind of push Y and it says go for it, which means they'll all kind of be aggressive. And they'll all attack at the same time, like kind of just kind of gang, like just rush against this enemy and kind of all bash up against it at the same time. And so you don't have to wait for each single character to go one at a time. It's much, much faster paced than that. I think the encounter rate's a little too high, and I think the game is probably a little too difficult early on, but there's a lot to like here. It's a very full-featured RPG, probably much more than the last one based on what I've read about the comparisons between the two. And I guess it's about $10 on the eShop. Like, if you've been pining for a good 3DS RPG and you're cool with this kind of, you know, very traditional Japanese RPG style, it's very, like I said, it's very much like Dragon Quest or Pokemon. But if you're into that stuff and you want something to kind of keep you busy until maybe Pokemon X and Y come out at the end of the year,
get Shin Megami Tensei 4.
Or that. But I think this is really good. It's a lot of fun, and it does have some interesting features and aspects to it that do set it apart from other stuff. The Street Pass, you would think for a game like this, the Street Pass feature would be really, really good. It's actually very simplistic. There's some sort of randomly generated dungeons that are dark, and every time you street pass with someone who also has this game, that's the problem. You get a little bit of time on your street lamp, and the street lamp lights up the dungeon, and it gives and it lasts for a certain amount of time, and you can run around and get really good treasures and fight really good enemies that give you tons of experience until the light runs out. And once it runs out, you have to wait until you street pass with more people before you go back in there. And I think it would work really well if it was compatible with just any Street Pass. So no matter
if every day was E3, it would work really
well. If every day was E3, even at E3 though, I mean, this game had only been out for a week, and it's obscure enough that even at E3, not that many people have it. So even at E3, I only got a few, even though I had it with me all week. So that's kind of the problem. Like, if it was just any Street Pass that you got would count towards the time, because you're not sending data back and forth. You're not transferring items or anything like that. It's just, all it's checking is, hey, did you get a Street Pass? Great. Here's some extra time. They should just let you use any Street Pass. That's kind of my complaint. But those dungeons are so lucrative that when you do get a Street Pass for the game, you're going to be really excited to go down there and use it. So I think Dimpamen 2 is pretty cool. And even if you didn't like the first one, especially if you're turned off by the demo of the first one, I think that's you should give this one another look. Yeah. It's pretty cool. Okay, well, that's going to wrap up new business. So now we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about E3, and it's all part of Listener Mail. So stick around.
Konnichiwa, Mini-san.
Hey there, it's Danny from the Famicast. I just wanted to remind you that the Famicast 25 Live will be coming to you June 30th at 10 a.m. That's Japan time. For those of you living in other parts of the world, in Australia, that's also June 30th, and it's at 11 a.m. North America on the East Coast, it's going to be 9 p.m. that night, June 29th. North America on the Pacific Coast, 6 p.m. And if you're in Europe, London, it's going to be about 2 a.m. on June 30th. And then for the rest of mainland Europe, it's going to start at about 3 a.m. I tried to get some kind of a great time in for this, but this seemed to be about the best we can do. So be sure to tune in. And, you know, it's not just going to be us just talking the whole time. We also want to give you, the listeners, a chance to interact with us. And not by only asking us questions, which, you know, of course, we're more than happy to tackle. But we also want to give you guys a chance to win some prizes. We're going to have some trivia questions, and if you can answer those correctly, you might be able to get one of our prizes. We're going to have some eShop cards on there and possibly a couple of other things. So definitely tune in live for that so you can have a chance to win some cool stuff. If the technology allows, which with a live show like this, all sorts of things could possibly go wrong or possibly just go incredibly right. But we want to give you guys a chance to take a look exactly at what we're watching. We're planning on having some kind of a segment where we're checking out some cool retro Japanese Nintendo gaming commercials. And I want you guys to see these. It's just so much better than just listening to the audio. So we're going to try to do some kind of a live video stream at the same time so you guys can check that out as well. So be sure to set your calendars for that date, June 30th, 10 a.m. here in Japan. If you're in Australia, it's June 30th, 11 a.m. North America, June 29th at 9 p.m. North America and on the West Coast, it's June 29th at 6 p.m. And if you're one of our faithful in Europe, it's going to be starting at 2 a.m. if you're in the U.K. And if you're in the other parts of mainland Europe, it's going to be starting at about 3 a.m. So one last thing, just be sure to keep checking NintendoWorldReport.com. By the time you're listening to this, there should be an event page up on the site. And that's something you want to check periodically because we might have some kind of new announcements or something like that. So definitely check that out. And from Danny, until the live show, that's going to be it. And we hope to see you then. Bye-bye.
Back, everyone. It is time for Listener Mail, the post E3 mailbag edition. We've got a number of emails here discussing the topic of E3, and Guillaume is going to read the first email this week.
Adel from Texas writes, some quick thoughts on E3. These are bullet points. Yes. Super Mario 3D World seems like a great game, but horrible, clunky title. That is true.
Uh-huh.
Smash Brothers looks like just an HD 3D update. Nothing really exciting about it. Characters are cool, but I want more of a hook. The shitty stream of the Nintendo Direct totally hurt any hype for the presentation that was pretty straightforward and not exciting. And why release a major update to a 3DS a week later with new Street Pass stuff and not mention it before? Overall, I think Nintendo did an okay job, maybe a C grade. What grade would you give Nintendo now that the dust has settled? Maybe I'm going to be the most positive one here of the group, but I think I'd give them a B. Like, I, you know, like, I would never, ever, ever confuse what I want and what I think will sell. But in this case, though, in this case, I mean, perhaps, like, the quantity of accessible 2D platformers can make, you know, a lot of Wii users just transition to the Wii U. I don't know. Like, I can't figure these things out. But I think that Donkey Kong has, you know, some appeal to it. A new Mario, even though we just had one. I mean, now it's been a little bit longer since, you know, the one before that, since New Super Mario Bros. 2. So maybe people are going to be a little bit more excited about it. Like, there's going to be so many accessible platformers coming up this this fall. There's going to be Rayman. The Luigi DLC just came out. I think that people are going to see all of that and on the shelves, and they're not going to think, well, you know, these are all the same thing. I think that they're going to see a lot of variety. And personally, I've already bought a kiddie pool. And I'm going to buy all copies of all of these games, and I'm going to get a one-piece old-fashioned swimsuit, and I'm just going to plunge into these platformers.
Where is what sort of weird place is this going?
Are you going to have a curly mustache when you do this?
I'm so glad you exist, Guillermo.
That's the best thing I've ever heard you say on this podcast. By far. Yeah, I mean, regardless of what you feel they should be doing, that's just not the kind of game the console needs.
Yeah, I think that's my biggest problem. Like, I think Donkey Kong will be really good. I actually enjoyed playing it at the show. I don't really have anything bad to say about it. It's just not that exciting. It's not that fresh. Frankly, I think people would be more excited, myself included, even those of us who are jaded and would have preferred they work on Metroid or something entirely new. But I think that game would have shown a lot better if they'd actually shown something new. That's the problem. It looks and feels so much like the first Donkey Kong.
But it's got a new camera now.
But it doesn't even look that different, even with the camera. It's really just so conservative.
I think that Nintendo needs to work on the timing of the releases, and that, you know, like coming up with New Super Mario Bros. U just after New Super Mario Bros. 2, and now showing this right after a 3D remake of the first game. I don't know what they're thinking. Like, I don't think they're, maybe they think they're building momentum or something. Like, maybe they think that they're getting people interested in the next game by doing this, but I don't think it's working.
It feels more like they're flooding us with platformers. And this is, it's going to come out only probably a couple months after Rayman Legends, which might even be better. Certainly looks more interesting to me and a lot, and it's certainly using the gamepad in a more interesting way. And you've also got, I know this is not going to matter in the marketplace, but critically, Cloudberry Kingdom's probably coming out in a couple of months. And that, I have to tell you, I played a lot of 2D platformers at E3 this year. Cloudberry Kingdom was the most fun that I had playing a 2D platformer at E3. And that includes Donkey Kong and Rayman.
But did you play it single player?
No, I played a multiplayer.
Yeah, I played it just with the guy demoing it, and I thought it was super boring.
Well, I've also played the beta for that game in single player, and I still think it's really fun there. It's a different kind of experience, but I still think it's really fun, so I'm not worried about it. But yeah, I guess my feeling is the grade is tough for me because, as I said on Weekend Confirm last week, if you look at the micro level, if you look at any individual game, I think they all look really good. And I think you can't really argue with the quality of the demos that they bring or the quality of games that they ultimately release. But I don't know that there's a strategy there. I feel like this is, like, people are saying Nintendo's really playing it safe. That was the big headline over at Kotaku, that Stephen Totilo, he looked around at these games and said, I've kind of seen all these experiences before. Maybe you add a new mode, or maybe you add a new character or a new widget, but all of this feels so familiar, and it's hard to get really excited about anything because it feels like there's not as much creativity. And, you know, Miyamoto's response is that, well, the creativity is in the details. Like, we're adding things. There's new experiences within these franchises in every single case. And that may be true, but I think to the casual observer, which is who you're trying to sell the system to, all this stuff feels very worn out.
Yeah.
And again, I mean, a new Mario game that looks a lot like the last Mario game might be totally fine if it is surrounded by other things that feel a lot fresher. But when almost every single game that they're publishing outside of Wonderful 101 feels like a sequel or a rehash or a remake, or and in some cases literally a remake, it's just really hard to get super excited about the lineup. And again, like if you zoom out and you look at the macro level at what they're doing, it doesn't seem to be a whole lot of rhyme or reason to it. And I think Nintendo's not playing it safe. I think they're playing very risky here. You know,
yeah.
When they've got a system that is so stillborn as Wii U, and they don't have something more exciting and something that people are going to be buzzing about, I think they're really playing it a very dangerous game here of sort of doing the same old thing that they've always done and expecting to get different results.
Well, that's just it. I mean, if you're considering buying a Wii U, you don't care about the details. You don't care if there's some sort of extra mode in this game. I mean, you want something to hit you over the head and say, wow, I really have to have that console.
They have those games. They're just not going to be here. They have games like Bayonetta 2 and X, which looked really amazing. Both of them looked really good, but they're just not ready.
But the real heavy hitters are all coming next year.
So, you know, like we talk about how Nintendo didn't really excite gamers. I don't think that that's what they were aiming to do, and perhaps it's not what they need to do. I think they just want to sell consoles to people. Like, they're trying to recapture this thing that they had with the Wii, with the mainstream. And I don't think that a plethora of 2D platformers is a bad idea. And by the way, I never thought in a million years I would ever hear people saying that there's too many 2D platformers coming out.
Well, when there's nothing else...
There's too many fucking 2D platformers coming out. This isn't even a disputable statement. This is a fact.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. It's when you have five games and three of them are 2D platformers, you know, like those, it's the numbers. It's the numbers that...
It's the fraction of their output that is this one genre. If Nintendo came out and announced five first-person shooters one year, I'd be complaining about that too.
If Nintendo announced five first-person shooters, I wouldn't be able to talk for like two straight minutes just in shock.
Yeah.
Yeah, but five first-person shooters... Any given Christmas is nothing really out of the ordinary.
On consoles with a wide breadth of genres on them.
But they're still coming up with Pikmin 3, and they've got these, you know, Wii Party U, which I'm gonna buy, and Wii Fit is coming this year, right?
All right, now you're just equivocating.
No, but I mean, like, they're trying to sell this thing to people, maybe not to us, although they like, who's not gonna buy these games?
I'm not going to buy all of them.
Your argument, Guillaume, is that they're doing what they need to do to sell the console. So do you think that what they're showing, especially, let's focus on 2013 especially, because that's the near term, and they're in bad shape right now. I don't think you can really argue against that.
Right.
Do you think what they showed is going to do the trick? Do you think this is what they need? Because I don't. I don't think this is going to work.
I don't know. I think that Donkey Kong and Mario, the same Christmas, is a powerful argument for a lot of people. And, you know, the fact that Rayman is coming out, no one outside, like, that's a much smaller franchise. No one is really going to care. And I don't know, like, for people who have too many 2D platformers, who don't want to play that many at the same time, there's Pikmin 3 and... I guess that the people who would complain about too many 2D platformers are going to know about Pikmin 3 and are going to want to play it.
I have a hard time believing that Mario, that a third Mario game coming out this Christmas is the solution to Wii U's problems.
No, but I'm not talking about just Mario. I'm talking about like this mass of games that's coming our way as a whole.
I think that the 2D platformer boat has already sunk in the harbor, though, because New Super Mario Brothers is the one that sells a billion units and sells forever. They've already done that. They've already New Super Mario Brothered us, and it didn't. It's just strung up off the shore right now. So I don't know how releasing...
No, but I think that the proposition is going to be a little bit more appealing this time, just because there's going to be so many more games on the shelves. Of all sorts of colors. You're going to have green boxes, red boxes, blue boxes. But yeah, like I do think...
I mean, that's basically what your position is right now, is that, well, there'll be games with different cover images. That's great, but they're the same experience. I mean, I've already played 2D platformers on the system. I want something else.
No, I understand that, but I think that the average person at Walmart is going to see like this new library and is going to be that it's going to be a little bit easier to sell them Wii U.
The average person at Walmart's there to buy.
No, let's not talk about. Yeah, that was a bad idea. Let's not talk about the average Walmart consumer.
That's not where I'm going. The average person at Walmart isn't there to buy. If you're talking about the average person who's going to go drop $350 on a console, because keep in mind they didn't drop the price,
which is insane.
You're going to have Black Friday. You're going to have.
Yeah, they're still going to drop the price. I still maintain they need to do it as soon as possible, and E3 was a very good opportunity to do that.
Yeah, I mean the thing is right. The games that they would have used to sell this console last year are pretty much the same as they're trying to use to sell it this year, right? It was interesting. I read an interview on CNN with snippets of comments by Iwata, and it's really weird because he kind of. And on the one hand, he says, you know, the problem with the Wii U right now is that we're not giving people games that show how unique the Wii U is. But, so Iwata knows. He knows that that's a problem. But then in the same article, he goes on to say that their primary focus is providing customers with experiences that you can only have on Nintendo platforms. But they're not doing that. That's the problem. So what's up? I mean, you know you have to do it. You're not doing it. I don't really get where Nintendo's coming from on this one.
It's like they understand the problem, but then they present a solution that's completely disconnected from that, and they say, "Look, see, we did what you wanted."
Yep.
We're going to talk about it, but the lack of gamepad features in these games is very strange. But yeah,
let me speak somewhat. I mean, I spoke a lot about this with John, you know, during the podcast we did. And one of the things that I think the takeaway for me is just – I know the sheer lack of diversity of it all. I mean, so when I went to see the Best Buy event, they were demoing Donkey Kong Country Tropical Smoothie. And they were handing people the 3DS Donkey Kong game to play while they waited in line. And it's – to me, that was such a short-sighted and sort of – dumb decision, because it's just saying, look, this is the same shit, y'all. it seems like that should have been the one game they were explicitly told, don't demo Donkey Kong Country Returns 3D, because it's totally not worth it. They're just going to be like, man, this looks similar. And it really did. I mean, yeah, Donkey Kong's fur is fur shaded. That's great, but if that's what they're going to talk about,
yeah,
get bent.
I just don't think any of these games are really going to get like a positive buzz going around the Wii U.
No, they needed something showy.
Yeah, any more than it already exists. I mean, you know, people have the Wii U; they like the Wii U. It's like that's the thing. It's like I feel like the Wii U right now. There's nothing overly wrong with it. There's nothing bad about it. It has good games.
It doesn't have it.
There's nothing spectacular about it either that pushes it over the top to get the large. You know, that critical mass of people actually going out and purchasing it.
And I think I understand that Smash Brothers wasn't ready, which seems almost inexcusable considering there's no way they didn't know they were going to make this game. Like, if they were able to finish two level sets of New Super Mario Brothers in the amount of time this system has been around, they should have had a Smash Brothers game ready. It should have been there.
Yeah.
And I think they knew it should have been there because they spent so much time talking about the damn thing, even though it probably won't be out before the next E3. Mm-hmm. I think they recognize the same thing that we see, is that their heavy hitters just weren't there, and they needed to be there. And that's why we saw Smash Brothers. That's why we saw a completely super-duper fan-service-y trailer of X. I mean, that game is basically pornography to me in that trailer.
Ugh.
That's really good.
But it's just a trailer. It's a game that I won't get to touch until at the earliest, probably October of next year.
Man, that game doesn't even have a name yet.
The reality of the situation is that they needed something with fireworks. And what I heard, and I mentioned this, is the comment they made, they talked about, well, We thought about showing the new Zelda game, but thought, no, we've got enough Zelda. It's not far enough along yet. We're going to make it more, we're going to try to make it less linear. It just tells me that they knew they needed something else. That in their minds, they were just as aware as we were, man, we're missing a tent pole here.
Yeah.
And I think they knew they needed something to sort of bring the house down. And I think you can't have an E3 if you're a console holder where you don't have something that makes people go, whoa, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I think the Smash Brothers trailer was their attempt at that, and I think it did pretty well, but again, it's so far out. And
yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
At this point, there have already been, you know, three really great Smash Brothers games, and you know, when the new one looks as much like those as this one appears to,
yeah,
it's harder. It gets increasingly difficult to kind of create that buzz.
You can't muster the excitement. Even internally, it's hard to muster the excitement.
Yeah. And look, I love Smash Brothers, and this is probably my number one most anticipated game, even over X for Wii U. But, you know, it's so far away that it's really hard to feel the kind of palpable, tangible excitement about playing it, especially when it's not even playable at E3.
And it's not a surprise that it exists either.
The first day was just work. I mean, just constant, unending work. Day two, I watched the X trailer probably seven times. And not just because the trailer is so amazing, because the trailer is awesome. But I think I kind of did it because I was a little bit bored. I mean, I don't know. It just, nothing they showed really got me pumped. Mm-hmm. And, or nothing they showed that's going to be out this year got me pumped. You know, they, as they're running through, you know, they showed 3D World and I thought, all right, I guess. Like, I love 3D Land, but I wanted, you know, I knew there was the 3D Mario coming. We all knew this. They showed Donkey Kong and then they showed this and I'm like, I don't know that I need both these games. I really don't. I mean, I think back to the year they had Kirby's Epic Yarn and Donkey Kong Country Returns the same year. I didn't buy both those games.
Hmm.
I bought Epic Yarn 2 full years later. And it was because I was satiated. I had enough. And they're like, no, we've got Luigi's coming out this month. We've got Donkey Kong. We've got Mario. I'm like, no. I know Mario's not a true 2D platformer, but it's not the kind of the big, open, expansive world stuff either.
Hmm.
I want something else, and I don't care what it is. I just want something else.
The big expensive stuff usually comes much later in the console's life, no?
No. Sunshine was what, 2 years after the system came out?
The cool thing about Sunshine is that it does at least have that expansive overworld, the connective tissue that's, you know, because it is kind of a sequel to Mario 64, which pioneered that, right?
Right.
And I think it, in hindsight, I feel a little bit silly hoping for some kind of really huge exploratory Mario game out of EAD Tokyo, because we knew they were making it, and
right,
none of the games they've developed, and I include the Galaxy games in this, have these giant environments. I think, as much as I love both of the Galaxy games, one of the things I've criticized it for, or at least a little bit of tinge of regret, something that I got out of the previous two 3D Mario games I didn't get out of that game, is that it doesn't really have this kind of big area that you can run around and explore. The levels are much tighter and smaller, and the game plays faster for that, which is a good thing. But I think even in the levels, like the honeybee level in, was it the, that's in the first one, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But where,
yeah,
it is more of like a Mario 64 level, it's a really bad one. You know, it kind of shows me that the Tokyo guys, they don't really make that kind of game. And 3D Land is very much a return to the kind of smaller level-based gameplay, which Galaxy really is. It's a lot of small levels, especially Galaxy 2, is a lot of small levels. You go in there and you get one or two stars and then you move on to the next one.
The level in Galaxy 2 that I most really enjoyed when I got there was the throwback level, Throwback Galaxy, where it was a level right out of Mario 64. It was the same damn level.
It really did feel fresh when you went back to play it, because there's a degree of abstract open-endedness to it and not really being sure where to go next that is completely missing from Galaxy, from both of them.
I don't think they showed anything that wasn't going to be a good game. I think they showed a collection of really good titles.
Yeah.
And they didn't show anything for me that makes me go, aha, I need that right now in my life.
Yeah, a lot of people listening to this are, and I know this, because I know there's a large contingent of Nintendo fans who are this drives them crazy. They say they showed up at E3 with a lot of great games that are really fun and that you're going to buy and love. What is your problem? What more can you ask?
For me, actually, I can't say that's true because I probably won't buy Mario Kart. I'm not a big Mario Kart fan. I'll probably only buy 3D World, so I'll probably skip Tropical Breeze for a while.
Sure.
I'm not the world's biggest Pikmin fan.
Like, I don't give a shit about Bayonetta, but I can certainly look at that and say, this is probably one of the most interesting, freshest things that they showed, and it's a sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so really, to me, the only game they showed this year that I'm super pumped about is, well, it's coming out for this year, is Wonderful 101. And I know that sounds weird, but it's different and it's exciting and I like the energy of it.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, that's sort of where I'm at.
I'm not sure if they could have had, you know, 10 Wonderful 101s. I mean,
no, but they could have had two.
they're not even really making that game. That's the other thing. Like, they're publishing it to their credit, but that's not even really a Nintendo game.
The total disregard for the 3DS is troubling to me, because I'm worried that by just assuming, yeah, everything's great on 3DS, we don't need to worry about it, that it won't become great on 3DS.
Yeah, and there's certainly a degree of swagger with the way Nintendo deals with 3DS at E3. And they had it with DS for a few years too. Some years they had a great presence for DS, and some years they did not, for sure.
Right.
But I do feel like, I mean, 3DS is doing well. It's doing very well. But I want that system to stick around for as long as DS did.
Right. They need to be more vocal advocates for it.
Especially, I mean, E3 is the land of third parties, right? Especially Western third parties. And that's an area where 3DS is doing very poorly. And DS didn't do all that well in that area either. But 3DS is doing especially badly. And, you know, even the most interesting 3DS game I played at E3 was that Batman game. And it was behind closed doors and only at Warner Brothers' booth. Like, Nintendo didn't even show that game.
Yeah, I don't understand that at all.
Finally, someone appears to give a shit about your platform in America, and you don't even give them a little bit of attention for it? Like, what is wrong with you guys? Like, you need American and European third parties to develop 3DS games. This needs to happen. It's not just EA. This is from everyone. Not even Ubisoft isn't even making 3DS games. That's how bad the situation is. And again, 3DS will be okay because of shit like Monster Hunter, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
But all the energy in 3DS is coming from Japan. So if they didn't show up to TGS with 3DS games, I'd be like, kind of doesn't matter, because all the Japanese people are going to buy those games anyway, and all the Japanese companies are going to make 3DS games.
Right, they're probably in line playing their 3DSs right now.
So yeah, they're already in line for Monster Hunter 4 right now.
E3 is the place where they need to show 3DS, and they need to engage developers and the public about 3DS games at E3, and they didn't. That sucks.
Like, the stuff that I got excited for out of 3DS, like, I liked seeing the new Phoenix Wright information. I liked seeing a couple other things, but I can't. I mean, there's so little 3DS content for me to even think about. The press kit had a lot in there.
Yeah, I'm just like, I can't wait for Monster Hunter 4 and Pokemon, you know?
But come on, 3DS and more than that.
Stuff that was shown that I got excited about, that they talked about. You may have seen more stuff on the show floor than they talked about, and that's entirely possible, but they didn't talk about it. And I know they didn't, because I was rolling through their press kits all morning.
I played exactly two 3DS games outside of Nintendo's booth, and those were Batman and Phoenix Wright. And those were almost the only 3DS games that existed outside Nintendo's booth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's troubling. I mean, Atlas had Shin Megami, so that's, to be fair, there was that one. I did not get a chance to try it.
Maybe Nintendo is trying, and it's just not working.
Yeah, maybe so. Well, guys, we need to wrap up this conversation because we're half an hour into this and we've gone through one email so far. So, you know, that's the way it happens. But I'm going to read the next one, and it's from Rob in Georgia. He says, "A very strange thing is happening in my life right now. I've always been a Nintendo fan first and foremost. My friends, however, are usually the standard Xbox players who either go all in on shooters or sports. During the past couple of weeks since the Xbox One reveal, I've had a couple of friends ask me about the Wii U and what I think of it. This is crazy. One of my friends buys one game a year. I'm not kidding here, Call of Duty, and he plays it all year long. For him to even ask about Wii U or to consider the PS4, which he told me he is now getting over Xbox One, is unheard of in our group of friends. Most of us outside of the press thought that all of the Xbox bashing and games journalism is just the new Twitter fad of the week. However, on the grassroots level, it turns out something real is going on here. People are openly abandoning Microsoft. My question is, should Nintendo make a marketing push in regards to the used games market, or should they just step back and let their two neighbors throw crap on each other's lawns?
So this question became hilariously dated yesterday.
Yes, but I think the core of the question is still interesting in that should right. Nintendo get involved in the console war here? And should they, is there a way for them to sort of position Wii U as an alternative? And it is, should they sort of do that in terms of their marketing or their release strategy or whatever? Or should they just kind of continue on and sort of ignore that there's even competition?
Yeah, it's like, should they? Yes. Will they? No, because they don't view themselves as part of that competition.
I actually disagree on that one. I think the shit throwing doesn't suit them. I think ultimately Iwata's comments on used games were, I mean, Sony's were the funniest. The video about how to transfer your PS4 games, it's genius. It's fucking genius.
But there's a way to tell that story without being confrontational and without being so snarky about
it. But see, to me, Iwata's answer is so much better than that. Make games they don't want to sell. Mm-hmm. Done. Out.
And you know what? They do practice what they preach.
I don't know.
But see, here's the thing.
That's such an easy answer. It's like, well, okay, Iwata, you know what? Make fucking games, dude. How's about that?
You know,
that's my advice for you.
John walked up to Confucius one time. He's like, fuck you. Your answers are way too easy.
It's easy to say. It's hard to do.
Exactly. I mean, it's...
But Nintendo, that's one reason we've said it many times. It's one reason that their games don't really fall in price over the years.
Yeah, I managed to sell my copy of Mario Kart Wii for $60. The price
Holy
I paid.
Shit.
I mean, come on.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, and that's a great game, but to just make a blanket statement like that, it's just it's a very flippant answer.
It's not always possible, but his point is valid in that you need to be worried about making the game that people want to keep playing, and then they don't worry so much about, like,
putting in DRM or, you know,
right.
codes or even I think one of the most crass things that a lot of third parties do on other systems is they force in multiplayer modes where a game seems like it doesn't really need one in the hope that people will get addicted to the multiplayer and that will keep them from selling it. And the thing is, like, there's a very limited bandwidth people have for online multiplayer games. And, you know, if that's not really the reason they're buying your game and they don't really want that anyway, that's probably not going to be much of a barrier to them going back to GameStop and trading it in.
To the most extreme case of that was that I've ever experienced was Mass Effect 3, in that you had to have the code that if you had a used copy was already used to get online. And then to get the best ending, at least till they changed the ending system, you had to play the online for a relatively extended amount of time.
No, you didn't.
Yeah.
Well, not really.
Yeah, you did.
That's overblown.
No, you did. You had to play it for at least a few hours to get even close to it.
It's not true.
It is true.
It's not true. I saw the best ending that you can get, which is not saying much, but I saw the best ending that you can get, and I've never played multiplayer to this day.
Did you have the new endings or the old ones?
I beat it twice before and after the update. So that, it's just not true, James. I know people said that was a story, but I don't think it's true. Anyway, I do think, use games aside, of course, now Microsoft is reversed on themselves. And so now both of those systems play used games, at least first party stuff. I think Sony's still saying third parties put fees and stuff in, but we're not going to do it for our games, and we're certainly not going to make them do it.
No one's going to take that bullet.
No, but they basically said that if they want to keep doing online passes, we're not stopping them, just like we didn't stop them on PS3.
Right. But here's one big advantage that Nintendo has over Sony and Microsoft, aside from having Nintendo's games, which is clearly the most, I mean, right now, the gamepad seems very much in the background. And really the reason that Nintendo is kind of projecting to buy a Wii U over another system is that you can play Nintendo games on it. And that's fair. And that is the real reason that a lot of people have bought Wii U's and that they will in the future, because that's the only system you can play Mario and Zelda on. But I think a really nice backup to that argument that they really haven't talked about at all is backwards compatibility.
Yeah.
And that's something that you don't get on Xbox One and you don't get it on PS4.
Yeah, and it's huge. I mean, just think about that. The number of Wiis that are out there and people that would say, you know, especially people that maybe aren't, you know, habitual console buyers that are kind of price averse. You know, they don't want to, you know, they put all this money and they probably bought a bunch of Wii games, maybe for their kids or whatever. Just think about how easy of a sell that would be to say, hey, well, you know, all that stuff that you already have, you can just use it with Wii U. You know, but you never hear that.
It's not just the game disc, John. It's also the controllers.
Yeah, exactly. The peripherals.
Huge.
And you never hear them say that.
That's a lot of money that you can save on buying controllers if you already have your Wii remotes and your classics.
Yep.
And it's also the virtual console stuff, which they've never done a good job of explaining to the mass market. But it's such a great feature. And they're rolling it out now, you know, with all these new features on the Wii U eShop. And I still don't think most people really even know about it. And I think that's something like there was actually another email we had where they were talking about what if they did like a nostalgic commercial where they kind of showed that you can play games like Super Mario Brothers and the original Legend of Zelda on your Wii U. I know that seems a little crazy that people might buy the system for that, but I think some people would.
I think it would at least plant the seed.
When that's on top of all the other stuff that it does, you know?
Yeah.
That's a really cool feature that you definitely don't get on the other consoles.
I just feel like when you wade in, I mean, they can talk about these features, but when you wade into it, you just sort of get lost in the chatter because ultimately they need to try, and I know this is their philosophy, avoiding technical comparisons is obviously something they want to do. But if they go and they start talking about this stuff, it's going to eventually become, if you're trying to balance out features, that's somewhat of a difficult sell. I think ultimately the only thing they really need to do is be price competitive.
That's a big one.
But they also have to point out, but one of the problems is that they haven't done a good job of pointing out what makes the Wii U unique. And these are the things that make Wii U unique.
Right.
Well, I mean, what makes Wii U unique, at least is what we were told every time they talked about the system, is the gamepad. And they haven't done a good job using that. I think that's more important than saying, we've got backwards compatibility.
Well, even then, James, I mean, the gamepad, I know we're still waiting for the games that make really, really good use of it. But even now, today, the gamepad does some really cool things that you can't do on other systems. And they haven't communicated that either.
Talk about that. Don't bother talking about, oh, we don't have any DRM on our discs.
Right. I agree with you. I don't think they should I don't think any company should ever want to talk about DRM.
No, it's a losing proposition.
But I think backwards compatibility is an actual feature that's useful that you might not expect. Off TV play is a really cool feature that you might not expect.
I think that's what they need to talk about because that's what says this is why this system is better than the other systems. Cuz it's more than just a little checkbox on a stat sheet. It's a real tangible thing that can be part of how you play the game almost every time you touch a system.
It has a practical value.
Sometimes it's almost as if they don't care what the Wii U can do, though. Like, I don't understand it, but I did ask, I don't know how much she knew, but the person at the Mario Kart 8 demo told me that, no, you can't have one player look at the TV and the other player look at the gamepad screen. And that just blows my mind.
She's probably referring to what's in that demo.
Right, that demo is not.
Yeah, generally, this is not always the case, but a lot of the people who are running demos at E3, they're very well trained on the particular game that they're demoing, and they can tell you a lot about the features that are or are not in the demo. But if you ask, in the final game, blank.
She said that in the same way that she explained that, yes, you will be able to do wheelies in the full version. I mean,
that because she was probably trained on that question because they knew people would come into this and see the bikes and say, wait, how do you do a wheelie? And she's trained to say, well, you can't do it in this version, but it will be in the final.
Mm. They basically anticipate the questions you're going to be asked. Now,
okay.
I'm surprised they wouldn't have been coached on that, you know, can I do off-screen play? But it may just be that the off-screen play is not ready yet, and they don't know if it's going to be in there.
It's you have to be careful what you take away because like sometimes you get someone really knowledgeable. Sometimes it's literally like someone who works at Treehouse might be demoing that game, and they're going to have a very different level of knowledge about the game than someone else. They're also going to know what they should not tell you or what they cannot tell you.
Right, they've been coached in that field as well.
Yeah, and I've had plenty of otherwise very well trained demo people at Nintendo's booth who will kind of get a little outside their depth and like try to tell me something about the game that's not really true. And I know it's true because in some cases I know more about the game than they do. And it's very interesting sometimes to see the kind of responses you'll get from them when you ask them questions about it. But anyway, it's very tough to draw the line between what you can believe and what you can't believe from what those people tell you. I think we covered that question pretty well.
Believe
so,
nothing.
So, John, why don't you take the next email?
All right. Buttle writes, quick question. In Mario Kart, will the second player be able to use the gamepad while the first player uses the TV? And if we don't know yet, if we don't know yet, I'm hoping that
next
you can
question.
Remind Nintendo that this is something we want.
Yeah, well, I tried that, so you're welcome.
Next question.
And second, any thoughts on the prevalence of war and killing and deciding who gets killed and just being in situations where you might die, as in so many of these games that get featured at E3? Do any of you get the drive to play these games? Not to say other consoles don't feature games worth playing, but I am happy that we have Nintendo, and though I wish that a Metroid Prime was on its way, or a new style of 3D Mario, or even better, a new IP, I love the new DKC and the new Mario 3D, and my biggest wish is that we can get the damn Wii U to sell so that they can stay successful and keep making my games.
Hey, as I said, I'm gonna be doing backstrokes in a bunch of, Wii U cases of 2D platformers.
They're gonna say, we've got this one guy who just keeps buying all the 2D platformers we can make.
It's the swimmer. Oh, yeah, that guy.
He's kind of creepy, but...
This question gets to an observation I had, and I haven't really heard anyone else talk about this. Maybe I just missed it because I'm still catching up on a lot of E3 coverage, both from our site and outside of it. But I noticed that there wasn't a single shooter at Nintendo's booth, and... There are shooters coming this year for Wii U. There's Call of Duty, there's Splinter Cell, there's, even Assassin's Creed is very much an M-rated game that's coming to the system. But Nintendo wasn't focusing on any of that third-party stuff, and certainly none of their games that they're publishing have that. And I think you can look at it as a pro and a con. I mean, on one hand, shooters are a very popular genre, and I think they're taking a marketing risk by not really having something like that to show. On the other hand, there's so much shooter fatigue, and this year probably is actually even better than most years because the new consoles do bring fresh IPs, and so the ratio of shooters to non-shooters probably better this year than it is most years at E3. I remember last year there was a lot of complaints about, oh my God, every game we go see is another shooter. And I think, it's to Nintendo's credit that they don't necessarily make what other people make, and that, their lineup is fresh in that way.
Yeah, I mean, I just wish, really, on the topic of shooters, I just wish that Nintendo would make their own style of shooter. That's what I wish.
Well, they were for a few years there, and I'm a big fan of it, but it didn't sell well enough, I guess.
Yeah.
Before we get to his question, I think we should have seen one featured this year, if only to sort of give rounding to that lineup. I mean, just sort of say, okay, look, we know there's a lot of platforming going on in this lineup, but we have this. I mean, I refuse to believe they couldn't have gotten at least one of the third parties who has a shooter coming out on the system to feature something for it, to give them some kind of demo. I mean, there had to be something that they could have gotten.
Yeah, like if anything, like I would have tried to go after something like the Plants vs. Zombies shooter. I mean, it is kind of in a style that perhaps would appeal to Nintendo fans. And
oh God, you're gonna make me throw up.
I wasn't too much of a fan of what I saw, but I.
Why not Watch Dogs? Why not try to get Ubisoft to show Watch Dogs?
Well, already people are tired of seeing Watch Dogs.
I think that's overblown. I think the media might be tired of it, but I don't think people watching from home are sick of Watch Dogs.
I mean, I want to know what the Wii U version of that game is going to do, because there's a freaking tablet built into the system.
Yeah.
In a game about using a smartphone to hack shit. I mean, they should have been begging Ubisoft to show that version of the game.
Yeah, and I mean, and they could say, hey, and here's why Watch Dogs is so good on the Wii U versus everything else.
Right. I mean, no other system's doing this.
Well, they kind of are, though. That's the thing. Like, all the other systems are using tablet integration over Wi-Fi, essentially.
Yeah, but this is built in.
Right. I agree. I think it's more convenient on Wii U, and it makes more sense.
This is built into your controller. You're not going to have a second device. You're not going to have to worry about your Wi-Fi. It's just going to work.
There's a lot to be said for that. And I think it's a message that they should have told.
And, I mean, it would have certainly would have rounded out what they were showing.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of – but to get to the question of, you know, this sort of – not just shooters. I mean, he basically spoke of violence in game as in the media as sort of an overriding theme over a lot of it. And I think to an extent, violence is an overriding theme in all media. Media is – telling a story is basically a conflict. I mean, yeah, there's no – you can't have a story that doesn't involve conflict, and violence is at the heart of a lot of conflicts. I think
it is a kind of conflict, yes.
And the easiest type of conflict to illustrate in a game.
It's the easiest to illustrate, and it also tends to be the most visually dramatic.
Yep.
Yeah, but I mean, Nintendo's not entirely immune from this. Look at Bayonetta 2. I mean, that game is – that's a rated M game.
That game is hyper-violent.
Yeah, that game is ridiculously violent. It's not. It's in an over-the-top way that can be comical, but – that game is, like, gonna be super bloody, and also it's full of tits and ass all over your face.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes, it is.
I mean, you know, there's nothing tame about Bayonetta, okay? That character is out of her mind. That's a game where you spend a lot of the game killing angels.
Yes. The trailer for that game froze at a certain moment where she is first introduced that is both overtly sexual and overtly violent in the same frame. In ways that make my brain go, I don't like where this is going. I'm not comfortable here.
And frankly, that's not really the kind of mature game I looked into. I would love if they had something more along the lines of Eternal Darkness or even Geist. I mean, Geist was a mature game in a lot of ways, you know, in terms of the story and the setting. And it had you doing something really cool that was macabre in a sense. I mean, you're playing a ghost of a guy who's dead. It's a mature game, but, you know, not in a super bloody way, not in a really grotesque, lazy way.
Violence in the industry. Sometimes it can feel like, are you really? Was this where we're going to go? I think last year, like Johnny said, it was particularly egregious. I recall John and I going back and forth on Twitter during Sony's press conference last year because it was just headshot, 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 headshot.
Yeah.
F-bombs.
Yeah, getting close to an enemy and stabbing them by pressing the button at the right time.
It had gotten to a point where it was a little unsettling.
Yeah, like, does every game have to be like this? Like a bloody, gory, you know, split people's head open mess?
That's a good point, actually. One of our listeners, Jason, he sent me a message on Facebook, and he makes some videos, like a video series about gaming, and sometimes he sends me links to them. And this was like a reaction video. So it's him watching Nintendo Direct, and it's like a picture in picture. So he's showing the Direct feed.
Did he freeze a bunch of times?
He was frustrated like we were, but he was watching it with his like 4-year-old daughter on the couch with him, and she's playing. She's not really paying that much attention, you know, but it's cute. And they kind of the whole theme of the video is they're going to watch it together, you know, and sort of react to it. And I thought, you know, you couldn't do this video with the Microsoft or Sony press conferences.
No.
Because the games that they're showing are so violent and profane and, you know, they're just so adult oriented that they're not family friendly. And I mean, the Microsoft one came on at like, what, 9 or 10 in the morning on cable TV, you know, like,
yeah.
It's something that I hadn't thought of before, but like I will say that Nintendo's press conference or whatever substitutes for it, at least it's something that you can sort of like watch with your kid. Like I think that's something to be respected, you know, it's sort of more than you could say for our podcast, our fucking podcast.
I mean, yeah. the Sony press conference last year, it was the first time in all these, you know, press briefings that I've ever seen where I've actually been like, that kind of made me uncomfortable in terms of the kind of material that they showed on a public stage like that. You know, like, it was way over the top. I mean, just, especially the language. I was like, wow, does every single clip that you have to have multiple F-bombs dropped? Like, really? Like, could you not have picked something else?
Didn't Ubisoft just show, like, Rayman and then immediately moved on to Far Cry 3 where the guy had a top... Like,
that was last year.
Yeah, with the topless girl and everything, and I was like,
yeah.
What the hell, man? Like, these shouldn't be shown just on, like, you know, a public broadcast. Like,
I think sometimes as an industry, and it's not just the gaming industry, film's bad about it, TV's bad about it, there's this sort of fetishization of violence where... I'm not saying that violence in media is bad. Before we get emails,
we're hardly prudes, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's like the fact that I was offended a little bit. I was like, wow, I'm actually offended by this. What the hell?
sometimes there's almost like an almost psychosexual level of violence here, where it's like somebody is really into this being violent.
Someone is getting off on this.
There's a certain degree of taste that you should expect from a multinational corporation.
Yeah, and I think that's it. I didn't think it was tasteful.
E3 seems to be a place where they break all of those rules.
And the thing is, I think violence in and of itself is a brush or a canvas that you can paint with or on, depending on how you want to look at it.
Yeah.
But you really have to understand how to use it, or it's just a mess. I mean, you can look at stuff like Mad World, where, yeah, it's super, super duper violent, but it's so self-aware of what it's doing that you can sort of prevent it from being overwhelming, because you can sort of compartmentalize it as, yeah, that thing just got chopped in half by my chainsaw arm, but it's okay because this is a crazy town world where everything makes no sense. And
yeah, at least it's done with some artistry. Like, I saw the new Suda51 game. I actually got to play a little bit of it, called Killer is Dead. And I mean, this is like triple distilled Suda51. It is...
I've heard it's insane.
It is No More Heroes mixed with Killer 7. I mean, it is exactly that. And it looks insane. It's so crazy. And it looks so cool. And, you know, the gameplay might be a little simplistic or whatever, but it's ridiculously violent. But at least it's doing something cool and interesting with it. And I think a lot of the games that Sony and Microsoft showed, they are doing something interesting with it. I don't want to paint with too broad of a brush here.
No, I agree. I think it's one of those things where you have to, if you're going to have a ton of violence in a game, there needs to be a certain counterbalance.
Well,
there
just needs to be a reason for it. There needs to be a purpose.
Yeah, and that was just it. I felt like a lot of it was just, like, gratuitous.
Well, I mean, there doesn't even necessarily have to be a reason. I mean, the stuff that happens in Mad World, there's no reason for why that shit's going down. It just is. But it's so divorced from reason that you can accept it on itself.
Well, there's a meta narrative there, you know, and I think it's tough at E3, and E3 is probably very vulnerable to this criticism, because these games they're showing are out of context. The things that you're doing in a demo at E3 are out of the context of the full game. So if they show you a part of the game that has a lot of action in it where you're doing a lot of really violent stuff, it's easy to come away with that and say, wow, that was really gratuitous. But maybe when you see the story before and after it and you understand the world and the characters that are in there, it's a little easier to understand why it is that way, or it's just not as shocking, maybe.
It's possible it's just a bad B-reel.
Yeah, I don't mind the violence as much as I mind the overabundance of shooters. Like, I really don't like the gameplay of pulling a reticle over someone's head. But I mean, yeah, like, that's a good point, that other genres perhaps are a little bit harder to demo at E3. Like, if they were to make kind of a really slow-paced, Blade Runner-esque world where, you know, more adventure-type gameplay, try showing that in an E3 presentation. That's probably not going to fly. Right.
Well, I don't know. James Cameron talked about Avatar. We're showing a slide for 45 minutes. I think anything's game if you're at the Ubisoft press conference.
Speaking of going on too long, we should probably move on to the last email this week, and James is going to read that one.
Ryan from Anaheim writes, 3 years. 3 years of disappointing E3 bullshit from Nintendo, and they still haven't managed to convince me of why the Wii U gamepad was necessary. One thing I couldn't help but notice from yesterday's Direct is that the gamepad was almost nowhere to be seen. Do any of these games need a touchscreen controller? From Mario Kart 8 to Smash Bros., I wasn't shown how these games will benefit from the Wii U's major selling point. The only, quote, games that seem to make use of the gamepad are Art Academy and Wii Party U. Yay! More non-games and minigame garbage. We'd be better off today if Nintendo had never thought of the gamepad. $350 could have bought us a system with more horsepower and the exact same games, only running better with prettier graphics. Quote, innovation is the greatest lie Nintendo ever sold to us. I'm not even going to start on how disappointed I am with retro. Such a waste of talent.
We're going to end on that.
Well, I hate to end the show on a negative email like this, but I did want to show the wide variety of responses to E3 that we got from people. I mean, the first one, you know, he rated it a C, which is pretty average. The next person said, basically, I'm really happy. I can't wait for these games. I really don't have a big complaint. And then, you know, Ryan here is saying he's really pissed, and for a very specific reason that I wanted to talk about, which is the lack of gamepad focus here.
And I think we all got there. I mean, we've all mentioned it at some point today.
Yeah, it is really striking. And I looked around and I thought, where is the gamepad here? Like, some of the demo stations that they had at E3 didn't even have a gamepad there to use.
Yeah.
It was really shocking. And I do think some of these games will have interesting gamepad features. They just weren't shown at E3. So Billy, he got to play a demo of Pikmin 3 with the gamepad that apparently had some really interesting implementation, but it was only in the upstairs VIP area of the booth. And I didn't even know that it was up there until after the show was over. So there's something going on with the gamepad there. I still don't know much about it, but maybe he can come back another time and tell us a little more about it. Bayonetta 2, I didn't realize this, partly because the Nintendo Direct stream was so bad, but I didn't realize it until much later in the show, but you can play that entire game not only on the gamepad screen, but even using touchscreen controls, which yes. Seems like a really weird fit.
Or genius.
And then a lot of people who played the multiplayer mode in Wonderful 101 commented that it's much easier to do those special formations and make the, you know, the symbols to activate those on the gamepad touchscreen than it is with a control stick on a pro controller.
See, I think Wonderful 101 actually does show the gamepad decently well, at least in the single player mode. Because I think the idea of using the gamepad to draw these formations that ultimately become attacks is actually not a bad idea. I think it's not the most exciting implementation. It's certainly not groundbreaking. And you could certainly live without it, but it's something. It's something that is that is core to what the game is. Ultimately, the game is about making formations and using them in fighting.
And you need to switch among them very quickly, and there's a lot. There's at least 8, I think, that we know of, so it's probably something that wouldn't be easy to assign to just a button.
Right, so it is somewhat core to what the game is. And I think, ultimately, that's the only implementation of the gamepad that I saw. Of course, I saw it from afar, where it is a core feature of how the gamepad is used in the gameplay. I mean, to put it into perspective, one of the instances of gamepad usage for the Best Buy demos was Mario Kart 8, where they took the gamepad from you and had orders to basically put it into like a holding shelf while people played that game.
Ooh.
And that's the only game anybody wanted to play. So that gamepad sat there for a long time.
That's weird, because you can definitely play with the gamepad versus a Wii remote in that game. I did it against Billy.
Yeah, they were doing Wii remotes.
And I'll say, I do like the fact that the gamepad supports both motion control and joystick plus buttons, and that you can switch it at the touch of a panel on the touchscreen. So you can switch it very quickly at any time. So I think that's a good use of the gamepad's, you know, versatility. But I think there's a hell of a lot more you can do with a gamepad in a game like Mario Kart. And maybe they're going to do it. Maybe they just haven't shown it yet. But E3 seems like the perfect time to show it.
You would think.
E3 is always the perfect time to show it.
Ryan discounts, you know, like the gimmicky non-games and mini-games. But I got to defend Wii Party U. Well, I mean, the gamepad does have gimmicky features, you know, like cameras and all that kind of stuff. And these kind of gimmicky features will be most prominently used in collections of minigames, because it's just the easiest way that these developers can try out, you know, experiment with the features without actually breaking the whole game.
It's a collection of tech demos.
Yeah, I think his point, though, is that this is the third E3 we've had the Wii U at. We should be beyond that point.
Maybe. But, I mean, like, they were trying some really cool stuff, though. And I really did like
the way... They were trying some really cool stuff when Shield Pose was on display.
Yeah, and you're going to be able to buy it next week.
Great. I'm getting a tech demo that I wanted 3 years ago, finally.
Two years ago. 3 E3s ago.
But I don't know. Like, I think that they're going to use, perhaps, the gamepad more in the coming years. It's just that right now it's easier to test out these things without breaking the whole game. In collections of minigames. Like, you've got one dud in Wii U Party, no one cares. But if your whole, like, if you make a whole game that's, you know, like 12 hours long, and one of your biggest gamepad features turns out people don't really like it, you're more in trouble.
It is very strange that Nintendo would design the entire console around this weird controller, and it seems like they didn't really have a deep trough of game ideas to do it with. I mean, from what we've seen so far, it seems like the whole system was designed around Nintendo Land, which doesn't seem like enough to justify doing it. I mean, I think the gamepad is really cool and there's a lot more you could do with it, but where's Nintendo here? I mean, they're going to be the ones to do it, and they're not so far.
Well, something Nintendo's always said in the past is that they generally design controllers when they have a game idea that they couldn't do with anything that they have right now. And this doesn't really seem to be that controller.
Right.
No, because, I mean, nothing in Nintendo Land is really that, I mean, that great. That it's like, yes, this is tremendous. A lot of what I get with Nintendo Land is like, eh.
But it seems like a proving ground. But what were they trying to prove? You know, and it's like this time, I mean, immediately after E3 is the time of the year when we know the most about when Nintendo's got up their sleeves. And it seems like they don't really have anything coming down the pipeline that makes really great use of that. And I can understand maybe in the first year they haven't totally shaken out the concept and they haven't fully evolved what their initial ideas were. But we're beyond that now. We're looking at games that are coming well into 2014, and those don't seem to use it either.
These are second and third generation Wii U games. These aren't like my first Wii U game. These are things that developers, maybe this is their second attempt at making a Wii U game, or they've got people on staff who have done it before.
And like you said, James, with Watch Dogs, some of these third-party games seem to actually make really interesting use of it, and they're nowhere to be seen at E3.
But like we say that we want interesting features in, you know, meaty games, but none of us but Zombie U, and that seemed to be like one path that you could take with a gamepad in you know, like a more traditional game.
Sure. I mean, I give them credit for trying. I just didn't enjoy what I played of it.
It's also a roguelike survival horror game. I respect Zombie U a lot, but I played that demo. I played it at E3, and I played the home demo that they put on the eShop, and I still don't like it. And I'm entitled to that opinion. I don't have to buy that game just to justify its existence. I think it sold pretty well on it without me.
It did. It sold decently well.
But you're right. I mean, it is a very good example from a third party.
And no one seems to be following their example.
Exactly. Right. Even though it did sell really well.
I think the implementation that they have, though, is very, you know, specific to that game. I mean, you really couldn't use what they did in a traditional first-person shooter. I think it would struggle immensely to be responsive in the way that people expect first-person shooters to be.
You could use it in a really cool RPG, though.
You'd have to build a game around what they've already pioneered. And I think that's, to an extent, that's the harder part, is coming up with a creative idea that fits around that template.
Yeah, but that's the whole point, though. I mean, these are the games that the console lacks.
Right. Well, that's what Nintendo should already
exactly.
have.
Nintendo, that's the thing. And I think that's kind of what we're always getting at, is the fact that Nintendo should, as the first party, should be the one creating these games that other people look at and say, wow, you know, that's really clever. You know, that's what, yeah, we should be doing that.
Yeah, they're not really inspiring creative use of the gamepad in other companies.
They are not.
That's a big disappointment for me. But again, if they had shown, you know, a lot of awesome, really creative, original games that didn't happen to use the gamepad, I'd probably be okay with that. To me, it's the 1-2 punch. It's like, here's a bunch of games that are really, really, really familiar and kind of experiences that you've already had before. And also, we're not even going to use the big crazy controller that you spent a lot of money on.
Yeah.
You know, it's those two, it's the combination of those that makes me feel like, wow, what a missed opportunity this E3 was for them. It's strange. It's a sense of, I almost feel like they're completely oblivious to how badly they're doing right now. And their E3 showing is just completely ignores the, you know, where the system is at right now and where the lineup of games is at.
That's kind of why with Mario Kart 8 getting pushed off till next year, that's kind of why, I mean, I kind of went in on it on Twitter a bit, but I was just like, I was kind of taken aback by it. I just couldn't believe it. I was like, really? So that's not coming out at Christmas? wow, so that's actually happening. That's not coming out of Christmas. I couldn't believe it. And, you know, I went through the whole, you know, stages of grief thing where it's like first I was upset, then I was angry, you know, kind of thing. And I'm okay with it now. But at first I was like, wow, I cannot believe that that is not their big Christmas game. I just couldn't believe it.
Okay. Was the tweet sarcastic? The one about the Mario 3D World selling you on a Wii U?
No, actually, no. But that's the thing. It's like the more I saw of that, I didn't say it was selling me on a Wii U. I said, this is the kind of game that I'm looking for. But that's the thing, though. I was expecting kind of more after that, and that was like it.
All right.
John, where do you think you are right now in terms of buying a system?
I'm probably about a year off.
Ooh.
I mean, and that's part of what pissed me off, right? Because I was like, really? So you're sitting here. I mean, I've said all along, hey, Nintendo, you give me Mario Kart 8, and I'll buy a Wii U. And I'm like, okay, so you're telling me that it's going to be out in like March or April of 2014? Are you kidding me? And I will say that, you know, that I'm not saying that there's not going to be any good games released. I mean, obviously.
But they'll still be there when you
get
one.
Yeah, and that's the thing. None of the games out there are moving me to get a console, and that's what is irritating me with it. Is the game? There are specific games that I want to play on Wii U, and Nintendo's like, okay, well, they're coming out next year, and I'm like, okay, well, then I'll wait until next year.
Yeah, but maybe Donkey Kong was someone's specific game that they were waiting for.
I'm not. That's the thing. I'm not saying that those games. That's the thing. I'm not saying those games won't please people, but for me, I'm like, okay, Nintendo, I guess I'm not buying your console for another year, and to me, that sucks.
It does suck.
In John's defense, if he were to buy it right now, it's kind of a losing proposition, because if he waits till next year, he won't be paying $350.
That's true.
He won't be. I mean, it's impossible that console still costs that.
Yeah, based on the history with the 3DS, you know they're going to drop the... That's the thing. If there's no games out there that I want right now...
There's no point in buying it
because they're going to drop the price. And I know that, and everybody knows that. You know, that's the thing. I'm also, I'm waiting on them to drop the price. I'm waiting for them to set... I was, like, my dream was... For them to put out, again, was to put out a Mario Kart 8 bundle for Christmas. To me, that makes perfect sense. And I would have bought that, absolutely.
John's like, my dream is they just deliver it to me, and I just get it, and it's free.
They want to wait 3 more months to drop the price because they figure they can sell at least 50 more of them at the current price between now and then.
Maybe.
Yeah.
If they drop the price now, then that de-incentivizes you to wait. Because that makes it much less likely there will be... yet another price drop by the time the game that you're waiting for comes out.
Only in the absolute case of a just system meltdown level emergency.
I think that they're just waiting for a release a little bit bigger than Game & Wario.
I think Game & Wario is I think Game & Wario is the reason you have to do it.
Because that's all you got, man. Because that game ain't selling any systems.
No, but I think that perhaps around the time that Pikmin 3 comes out, maybe...
See, I would say if they're going to wait till Pikmin 3 comes out, wait a little bit longer, because people might actually buy the system for Pikmin 3.
How about a marketing campaign for Nintendo Land or New Super Mario Bros. Luigi? I mean, they've got games. That's the thing. They're not selling the games they've already put out.
I have never seen a Wii U ad. I still haven't.
All right. My hands are thrown up in the air. I don't know what else to say. Please let us know what you think. I don't want to be super negative. It's just I'm still kind of flummoxed about the whole situation. I want to feel better about my Wii. I'm about to go play some Luigi, and then I'll feel better.
Justify my purchase. Make me feel good about what I have done.
So let us know what you thought of these discussions of of where the Wii U's at right now. Or maybe tell us something about 3DS so we'll feel better.
Cheer us up for crying out loud.
What's a 3DS? I've never heard of one.
The email address is rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. And you can also go to the website, go to the article for this episode or any episode of the podcast. There's a link in there as well you can use. We would love to hear from you. If you haven't heard it already, I hope you'll go check out Weekend Confirmed, which is the great podcast by Garnet Lee and Jeff Cannata and other people from Shack News. I was on last week's episode. It was a very great honor for me. I was incredibly excited and nervous to do it. You know, at the time, I didn't know that I really did a great job. I was very pressured with time and with, you know, the weird situation. I was in a professional recording studio, which was very strange for me. But people have been really nice and very supportive of how I did on there. And, you know, I hope you'll go check it out. I think it's an interesting show. And, you can find that over at shacknews.com, and I'll put a link to that in the article as well. And finally, before we go, I wanted to give a huge personal thanks to our entire E3 team, and especially Mr. James Jones, who held down the podcast not only in hosting his own very long episode with Greg and John and doing a great job of hosting that and putting that together very quickly, but also helping us get our away team shows posted and get the feed updated. And all the whole time, he's also like managing the home team and like writing articles and getting a ton of shit done. So James, I think you did a fantastic job, and a lot of the work you did is very behind the scenes, and a lot of people probably don't realize it. So I just wanted to give you a little bit of credit.
I'm going to sleep.
All right. On that note, we're going to say goodbye for one more week. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye. Later.